choose to work with a deadline for your entire working life, you gotta be a little bit crazy. And crazy is great radio. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. We're not in 360 today because we are outside the Raptors store at Scotiabank Arena. So
hope they got crowd control here.
I'm sure they have crowd control here at some point. It's Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt. Special Raptors roundtable to get us set for tonight. Eric Smith and Paul Jones will.
Jonesy's putting on his wardrobe here, his radio wardrobe, so you got to give him a second.
Oh, that's right.
He's dressing.
Jones
cool.
Gets radio. You don't need a tie, man.
Tell him Jones is about to choke a ball.
It's like we color coordinated today, too. He didn't even talk.
He's been. Jonesy's been fighting the power here.
Has he really?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's our guy, man. He's always fighting the power. Always fighting the power. Paul Jones, Eric Smith alongside Stephen Brent.
Nice that you're not incarcerated, Jones.
Jeff Blair.
Hey, man, did you ever see the documentary on Netflix, 13?
Yes.
Stop it. As we get ready to celebrate the Raptors NBA championship.
Don't poke the bear, Brunt, today.
There will be a banner raising tonight. The players will get their rings tonight. The New Orleans Pelicans are in town without Zion Williamson. More about that later. But, gentlemen, you know, every time I think of teams and championships, because I'm a baseball guy, I kind of got to bring it back to baseball. The 1997 Florida Marlins beat Cleveland in the World Series, and then they absolutely stripped their team apart after
They took it apart, yeah.
And I remember talking to Moises Alou about being on that team, winning the World Series. What a great experience it was. He was traded to Houston in November as part of the stripping apart of the team. And his comment to me was, you know, we all got rings. It was great. We had a big party the night after the World Series. And then we came back in spring training, and we were gone. It was like, he's with Houston. Guys are with other teams. And he said one of the things he really missed was, and he put it kind of poignantly, he said, I missed that day in spring training when it's pissing rain. You're not going to play. Somebody turns on the music. Somebody cracks open the beer, and you just sit around and talk about what it's like to win the World Series. So I'm wondering with the Raptors, and for Raptors fans going in tonight. No Kawhi, obviously. Is that going to have an impact? Eric, I'll start with you. An impact on the celebration at all. Will there be a hole tonight?
For the players or for the fans?
Both.
Honestly, I think the answer would be the same for both. I don't think there will be. I think for the fans, they've had time to deal with, get over, think about, accept that Kawhi's gone. And there's no doubt, to me, It stings more earlier in the summer because the decision came, 3 weeks after you won the championship? I mean, you really didn't even have that full month, that entire summer to bask in the glory and to be the champs. It was suddenly you win the championship, boom, 3 weeks later, he's joining the Clippers. But now that you've had time, I think, over the course of the summer to accept, move on, and realize, hey, we still are the champs. We still are going into the season trying to defend the title. We are the reigning champions. We are going to be, you know, blowing the roof off the joint tonight when they lower the banner and the players get their rings. I think as the season goes on, the narrative will still be, yeah, but Kawhi's gone. Yeah, but so did Danny Green. He left too. But I think tonight in this moment, it's going to be nothing but bedlam. I don't think it'll have an impact on the celebration.
I don't either. Hey, man, you won.
Yeah.
Bottom line me, and I'm getting a lot of this now where people are like, well, do you think if Durant was healthy? Hey, man, wasn't it Gene Hackman and Hoosier said, my team's on the floor? And being healthy, getting past injuries,
it's all part of
the game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you know, I hit that 5-iron. If it wasn't windy, it would have gone 10 more yards. Yeah, but it was windy, and it didn't go 10 more yards. Like, Kevin Durant was hurt, and the team that was on the floor got beat. Nobody's revisionist history. Does anybody remember Golden State's first title?
Yeah,
when they played Memphis without Conley when he was hurt, they every round, like they, I think they had the Clips in there at one point.
Yep.
And Chris Paul was hurt.
Yep.
They got to the finals, and it was LeBron and the four of us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Kevin Love's out, Kyrie Irving's out.
And it was still 2-2 at that point. Like, I'm sorry, the team is on the floor. So for the people that want to take away or make light or try to degrade this championship in any way, it's just like the Florida Marlins, Blair.
Yeah, well, if the ball doesn't go between Tony Fernandez's legs, right, that 97 World Series is different, right?
Like, absolutely.
So there's no asterisk on championships. I, you know, if you win, you know, four rounds in the playoffs in any sport, there's no asterisk. I guess, I think this is going to be an interesting night because I don't really have a point of comparison in sport. For
not in our lifetime in Toronto for the most
well,
part.
But also a team winning the championship and then having the key guy being gone. Like there was a between 92 and 93 with the Jays, there was a lot of turnover in that roster. There were some different guys. And there were some guys who weren't there in 93.
But that was almost a managed turnover.
But the core
was. But Brent, yeah.
We'll say this: the core of guys that won. There was still a good group.
Yes.
A number. And don't take away from what those guys learned in winning. And taking it forward into that nebulous term that we throw around in sports now called culture.
Yep.
Because it's here in Toronto. It was being built. It was capped off with a championship. And now Toronto has a, quote, culture. And that's the way it is. You heard Nick Nurse talking about it in the preseason, about some of the new guys. They don't understand how hard we have to play and how hard we played and what they have to do in our system. And that's what it is now. It's like, you know, the San Antonio way, the Yankee way. It is what it is right now, and I don't think anybody can downplay that.
No, nor should they. Again, I wouldn't suggest that. I just think it is going to be
Douglas.
Legendary Doug Smith walking by.
With his entourage, yeah. I just think
he'll be joining us, by the way.
It is going to be, you know, again, all of that is true. But there is going to be a shadow hanging over this from a guy who's not there. Not that it's going to, it's not like we can compare this to other Raptors championship celebrations. This is what it is, right? This is the one, and it's fantastic. But that is true. That there is, you know, one guy in the line who's not, you know, who would have been there, who's not going to be there.
I think what's going to be real interesting, too, is the reception. I don't doubt for a second that he'll get cheered.
Yeah.
But December 11th, when the Clippers come to town, how big is the celebration? How loud is the cheer? How long does the ovation go on for Kawhi when they present him with his ring in Toronto for that game against the Clippers in early December?
Well,
it should be
long and loud, shouldn't it?
I absolutely think
until
so.
Until the game starts,
yeah.
And he's wearing the wrong jersey, right? And that's the way it is. I got no problem with that.
How different is this team going to be tactically, stylistically, maybe emotionally, guys, without Kawhi? Understanding we've only seen the preseason. We haven't seen the regular season yet. But what are you prepared when you watch the game, Jonesy and Eric, and Steven as well? Obviously, I'm not eliminating you in this. But what are you guys prepared to see when the game gets going?
For me, Kawhi, they played a quarter of the season without Kawhi last year.
Yep.
And we're 17-5. And when he was in the game, I'm not saying he wasn't a willing passer, but he took his time making decisions with the ball. And you're allowed. I mean, he's the best player. He needs to have his hands on the ball. When he wasn't in the game, the ball popped a little bit more. And there were basically these kind of two styles that the team played. One with him in the lineup on the floor, and one with him not on the floor and not in the lineup. And I think you're going to see that trend toward the second one more. They're really built, I think, if they're healthy, they're really built well for the regular season. I mean, people, some of our colleagues in the States are saying they're not going to make the playoffs. They're going to be 8. Wow. Like,
I don't see it.
Maybe I'm too close to the forest to actually see trees. But this team still has 6-7 guys from the championship. OG Anunoby didn't play. They have that added kind of, we know what we're doing now. We've done this before. And I think that's the way they're going to play. And Nick Nurse has always stressed that. When you catch the ball, pass it, shoot it, drive it. Do not hold it. And I think you're going to see a whole lot more of that this year.
Well, plus their best guy is getting better, right? That's you know, and that's fundamental, right? You're right. I've seen you go through the kind of power ranking stuff and the variety of guys in the States. You know, they're getting a lot of 16s and 17s and 15s and 14s, right? They're kind of middle of the pack, low playoff seed. But I think that's an overreaction to Kawhi's departure.
I'd be disappointed if they didn't have home court in the first round.
Yeah.
Whether that's second, third, or fourth, I mean, I still think Milwaukee's the best team in the East, but I'd be disappointed if they didn't have home court.
And it's funny because everybody's talking about Milwaukee and Philly. Philly got Al Horford.
They lost Jimmy Butler.
And they got Josh Richardson, but they lost Jimmy Butler.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I'm waiting to see if Giannis has found a jump shot yet consistently in the mid-range and out beyond the arc. And they lost Malcolm Brogdon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure I'm ready to kind of anoint or hand it over. People, what about Brooklyn? Yeah, they got Kyrie Irving, but you talk about a guy with his hands on the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't even let the floor touch it sometimes. I mean, so it's the dynamic in the East is very, very different. People are like, oh, what about Boston? They're trying to get something back from not last year, the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, Jason Tatum goes to Kobe's camp. And all you heard about last year in Boston was this Mamba mentality where he'd put his head down like Kobe and dribble it 45 times and then try to make a shot. Brad, that's not going to fly with Brad Stevens. So I think it's wide open in the East.
And even in Boston, Jonesy, what you think about Kemba Walker has been the man in Charlotte. Is he going to be a willing passer now? Is he going to be able to include Tatum and Brown and the rest of the weapons that he's got in Boston? Or is it going to be akin to what Kyrie was doing where he went into takeover mode to the same point then to go back to Brooklyn? What's he going to be like in Brooklyn, a team that I think a lot of people felt came together last year as a team?
Yes.
A lot of pieces. But now you got Kyrie, arguably one of the most talented but one of the most selfish players in the league as well. What's that dynamic going to be? Is it addition by subtraction for Boston? Is it subtraction by addition for Brooklyn until Kevin Durant is healthy? There's a lot of questions.
I think Boston's going to be better with Kemba than they are with Kyrie.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. See, that remains to be seen.
And the way I looked at it, Stephen, is, you know, you look in the East. It seems to me that everybody in the East has either taken a step sideways or, and work with me on this, maybe the Raptors have taken a step back because they don't have Kawhi. But they get OG, knock on wood, for the whole year. So I'm with you guys. I look at the East. I see every team has made significant changes. Every team has question marks over it because they've brought in different guys. And I think Malcolm Brogdon's absence from Milwaukee is going to make a huge... I think people are underplaying the importance of that absence. I mean, I almost look at this and go, it could end up the way it ended up last year. Like, it really could. I don't see anybody there. I'll tell you what, if Brooklyn hadn't added Kyrie Irving, I would be more bullish on Brooklyn from last year with some other addition. I'd be more bullish in them than I am with them with Kyrie. And now, of course, Durant comes back next year. We're talking different thing. But I'd be more scared of them if they had last year's team intact, everything they had going for them, and then maybe added somebody else. Maybe they got Horford or something like that.
You know, I was saying, I don't know if you and I were talking about this or not, Jonesy. Jeff, Steven, I think of Toronto, and with all due respect, this is not meant to be a knock. If you can win with Lowry and DeRozan as the 1-2 punch, 50-plus games regularly, I don't see any reason why you can't win 50-plus with Lowry and Siakam, and oh, by the way, even though he's aging, a Marc Gasol.
Mm-hmm.
Let alone then think about the other pieces that you have with the improvement and the continued development of a Fred VanVleet or a Norm Powell or an OG Anunoby, let alone Serge Ibaka, who seemed to find the fountain of youth last year. If you can win those 50-plus with the 1-2 punch of DeRozan and Lowry without a lot else around, I think you can at least do 45, 48, 50, 52 with Lowry, Gasol, and again, Siakam coming on. I don't see any reason why they can't
Although
be a still good team.
Depth was, you know, in the end, depth was a big part of that team, right?
Yep.
The second unit was a big part of that team. So you weren't riding those two guys quite as hard as you might have.
You know, and Nick Nurse touched on that a little bit yesterday, Stephen, too. He was saying he doesn't plan on seeing this team having a five that you can roll out, a second five, where you're going five and five and having a full second unit. Mm-hmm. But he thinks that his seven or eight that he has are pretty damn good to the point where it'll be interchangeable. I think it's going to be interesting to see those interchangeable parts. If he ends up starting more regularly than not VanVleet and Lowry, he's going to have to get creative because there's not a lot of depth beyond that at the point position.
Yeah, which is why, you know, the one kind of nightmare scenario is injury in a couple of those spots.
With anybody else, with everybody. And I heard you guys, I was listening to you guys yesterday, or maybe it was the day before when you had Grange on, and you guys were talking about the over-under number. And I take the same line as Grange. Maybe I'm too close to the water fountain and drinking too much. But when I was in Vegas this summer, it was like 45 and a half or something. I'm thinking, like, that's four games above 500. Yeah. Like, I think they're going to be better than that. But, again, if people have to stay healthy. And Nick said it best. He said, last year, he said, we've got eight starters and only five spots. I think he's got the same deal going this year. He's got seven or eight starters, and he's got five spots. And on any given night, it's mix and match. And we're not even talking about what some of the other guys might do. Like, there's potential with Stanley Johnson, with Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, with a Malcolm Miller. Like, there's potential there. And it's about the improvement, too. This is not it's a dynamic situation where the team's going to improve over the course of the year as well, particularly if they get to stay healthy.
It is a Writer's Block Raptors Roundtable with the voice of the Raptors, Eric Smith and Paul Jones, voices of the Raptors. We'll talk a little later on in the show about, I want to do kind of a deeper dive into the composition of this lineup. But guys, I want to talk a little bit about the New Orleans Pelicans tonight. No Zion Williamson, as we mentioned, a meniscus injury, 6 to 8 weeks. It takes a little bit of the marquee nature, obviously, out of the opponent the Raptors are facing tonight. But a lot of people in the NBA are talking about this. Jonesy, I mean, you played the game. Should we be concerned about whether or not this hints at anything long-term with this kid?
No, I don't think so.
This is not Greg Oden.
I don't think so. I mean, and you bring up that name. Only, I think it's in the history, since 2000 or something, only three guys that have ever been drafted number one have not played on the first night. And those guys all missed the full season. It was Greg Oden, Ben Simmons. I forget who
Blake
the other
Griffin,
one was.
Wasn't it?
Blake Griffin. Right. Yeah. So I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so. In a way, it's kind of good for Toronto that he's not around stealing the national spotlight in the U.S. because it would be like, oh, they're up there in Toronto, but Zion Williamson's playing. Mm-hmm. Well, now their narrative is, well, they're up there in Toronto, you know, and there's no Kawhi Leonard. Well, you know what? The banner's still going up. The rings are still going to be handed out, and that part of it will go on. I will say this about the Pelicans, though. I think David Griffin's done a terrific job in putting the team together. You know, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Drew Holiday's an all-star.
Yep.
This is a team that, if Zion's healthy and they get some breaks, they could be on the cusp of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. It's not, but it's, you know, it is. You're right. It kind of, the spotlight is not shared tonight because of that. But it's not a good thing for, you know, for basketball, right? I hope you're right that this is not. You know, the injuries he had in college are not this injury, so you can't connect the dots between those and this and say, look, this is a guy who's got an issue, you know, a specific issue that could impair or diminish his career. But basketball, like, you want this guy to jump in there and be a superstar.
His body's still young, Brent. I mean, think about Michael Jordan when he first came in. People were asking those questions with the broken foot, and then, you know, he, after getting beat up by Detroit consistently, he decided, enough of this. I'm going to get this body in really good shape. And it was a time when they prided themselves, guys did, on playing 82 games.
You know, the one thing that concerns me about him, and I know you and I talked about this last year, and
can we just give a shout-out, by the way,
Jim LaBombard?
Jim LaBombard just walking by wearing his Leafs hat. Nice job.
The local legend.
Former Raptors PR director.
He's probably got a Pelicans hat he's going to put on when he goes in the...
yeah.
We talked about this last year, Jones, and I promise you I'm not saying this because the man's injured right now. I have my concerns about his size at his height and the power at which he plays and the force at which he plays and if that's sustainable at the professional level against men. And doing that every single night. And I'm not saying pull a 180 and completely alter and change who you are and change your game. I just wonder if it needs to be dialed back 10%.
How different is he than LeBron when LeBron broke it physically?
Different styles, different games.
Right.
I mean,
different body.
People say there's no comparable for Zion. To me, the comparable is Charles Barkley. It really is. Now, Charles was only 6'4 and a half, but...
Well, Zion, though, if we believe the measurements, is only 6'6 or whatever. So yeah, he's only got an inch and a half.
An offensive tackle playing basketball with that proficiency is what you have. And that's what Charles was. And you got to look after your body. You got to watch your weight. And the other thing, by the way, he's with one of the probably top 3 to 5 best training staffs in the NBA. I mean, Aaron Nelson, he had those guys in Phoenix. He turned everybody around.
Yeah.
And that was a great hire, a great get for David Griffin.
Well, and his coach, too. I know you speak very highly. You know him better than I do, but Alvin Gentry.
And look, they'll have the kid in shape. Like, again, he's 19. He's 1 year removed from playing AAU, and he's playing against men. They will work with him. I don't see it being an issue, and I just can't wait for the kid to get back out on the floor.
There is another rookie, though, who will be playing tonight for the New Orleans Pelicans. He's Canadian. And we'll talk about Nickel Alexander Walker when the Writer's Block Raptors Roundtable continues, live from Scotiabank Arena on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Oh, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're outside the Raptors store. I guess we can call it
Real Sports Apparel.
Real Sports Apparel.
I'm looking at the sign from here, yes.
At Scotiabank Arena, Jeff Blair, Stephen Brunt. It is Writer's Block. Tim and Sid will be live from 5 to 7. Out at Jurassic Park.
See, this is bringing back memories for myself and Jonesy.
Paul Jones.
We used to do the post-game show, The Wrap, from when this thing...
No, we started over by Lord Stanley's
Mug.
I was getting there.
We started inside at Lord Stanley's Mug, when it used to be called that, inside the arena.
Mm-hmm.
We were live in the bar, had drinks poured on us and spilled on us while we were doing the show, back in the 20 and 25 win days. Then...
Made me a drinker.
When they did this whole... Yeah, right. Just through evaporation more than anything else. Then when they opened up this whole front area with the rusted sculpture and the condos and whatnot, Real Sports Apparel used to be across the way. I think it's now a Sport Check.
Yeah.
But we were behind the glass because they couldn't figure out how to put us out into the main concourse. So we're doing this live post-game show.
Behind glass.
Trying to interact with the fans, but we're behind glass like in the fishbowl, and people are coming up knocking on the window while we're trying to do the show. We were flashed a couple of times.
Lion in the zoo.
Sunshine, like mooning, whatever you name it.
You were flashed?
We multiple flashes, a couple of moons and a couple of sunshines. So we saw quite a bit over the what we did that for 4 or 5 years.
You'd never know, Blair, because we just the show must go.
Yeah,
the
no, I was going to say that explains why you stayed there for 4 or 5 years.
And the phones would come out. You sort of turn your body and just broadcast to the store for a second, so that there's no pictures of you and your face staring at somebody revealing themselves. Those were the days.
Yes, they were. That was, well, no, they weren't. Not if you're a basketball fan. These are the days.
Yeah.
These are the days if you're a basketball fan. We mentioned no Zion Williamson for the Pelicans tonight, but some local content in Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Jonesy, what do we need to know about him? And what are your expectations for him this year?
The kid is, first of all, and I'm going on record right now, and I saw Alvin Gentry last night. The kid might be the steal of the draft. I know for a fact that he was on New Orleans draft board, and not from New Orleans, from other people, because they were ready to take him as high as 9 or 10, and he was still sitting there at 17, and apparently, New Orleans, you're on the clock. Nickeil Alexander-Walker, New Orleans is, like, they didn't need the time.
Mm-hmm.
He is, and by the way, unlike many others, he does want to play for Canada.
Oh, that's good.
He does. He's
from Vaughan, correct?
He's legit 6'6", like he's long, he's angular, he's athletic. He is confident. I watched him play in summer league at Vegas, you see him on video and like everybody looks, you know, on video, it's like, yeah, he's okay, he looks pretty good or whatever. It's another thing when you sit there and you look into the person's eyes. And I was sitting courtside there in Vegas, and this kid can really play. He's a good defender. He's good with the ball. Now, mind you, LeBron and Steph Curry and Kyle Lowry weren't playing summer league, but he looked really, really good.
How does his game translate to this level, Jonesy?
I think pretty well, because he's got a lot of tools. I think he needs to improve his shooting, and just in terms of being shot ready, getting it off a little bit quicker. He handles the ball well. He's fearless. He makes, for the most part, pretty good decisions. I like the kid. I like his game. And you know what? He's the first one. I hear he's the first one in the gym and the last one out. And he'll go and, like all crazy guys that want to be good that are crazy players, he'll go, he'll have something to eat, and he'll be back in an hour, back in the gym, trying to get better.
Do you have a sense of how they're going to use him out of the gate?
I don't.
Sparingly?
I don't know. Okay. I mean, like, look, Alvin is a guy. Remember, Alvin Gentry was in Phoenix when Steve Nash was there. And they had some pretty funky combinations on the floor. Like, you can't play Sean Marion at four. Oh, yeah? Watch. You can't run up and down and throw the ball and shoot in less than 7 seconds. Oh, yeah? Watch us. And Alvin's very creative like that. So, I mean, he's probably got an idea, and I'm sure it's changed a bit since the Zion injury. But
that's what I was going to say.
But let's keep an eye on this kid.
You look at his college numbers, right? 16.2 points, 4.1 boards, 4 assists, 37.4% three-point rate. I mean, in a lot of other years, he would have been a lottery pick, would he not? A lot of other years?
Well, and I mean, to Jonesy's point, I guess he could have been.
Yeah.
Depending. Yeah, I mean, with numbers like that, I think what maybe held teams back, and Jones, you can weigh in as well, but I is maybe it's his frame, because he is pretty thin. And it's one of those things where, to your point earlier, you were talking about Williamson and working with the training staff. Now you get with these, you know, trainers at the professional level, at the NBA level, let alone specifically who they have in New Orleans. Maybe they work with him that much more now. He needs to fill out. He's still got a very young body, I think, and his size, especially for his length, at 6'5", he's pretty rail thin. And I think it's going to be something that he needs to work on, the strength, especially, you know, trying to bang against some of the bigger bodies now at this level.
Jonesy, you mentioned about him playing for Canada and being committed to Canada. Let's just talk about that. I don't want to hash over what happened this summer again, because, I mean, we talked about it ad nauseum. But I do want to kind of close it off before we continue our discussion on the Raptors and the Pelicans tonight. You know, look, again, you're part of the furniture with basketball in this country, both of you guys. Now that we've been able to kind of step back from what happened, is that a missed opportunity? How do you look at that?
Yeah, a bit of a missed opportunity.
And I guess does the start of the Raptor season kind of, now we can start getting that more positive vibe about the sport in this country?
Canada needs their guys there. They do. Let's bottom line it. If they're going to be good, they need their guys there. They need them playing together. They need them experiencing highs, lows, adversity in international competition. They do. Mm-hmm. That was proven when the U.S. lost in 2004 in Athens when they got the bronze. And Larry Brown is a good coach, and he's the kind of break you down, then build you up coach. They didn't have time for that, and they didn't. They just, the chemistry wasn't there. And I think for Canada, Jeff, they need that. Mm-hmm. They need to have those guys playing together. And it's unfortunate because sometimes guys just don't want to play. Sometimes there's contract situations. Sometimes there's insurance. There's a myriad of reasons why it doesn't always come together. But to me, it's also the wiring, too. Kids have to be wired to want to play for the country. And that hasn't been the case recently. Like back in the day when the national team was it, guys would do anything to play for Canada. Yeah, they got prep schools. They're focusing on scholarships. Guys are playing in Europe. Mm-hmm. Working on an NBA deal.
I want to jump in with one thing, though, and I don't disagree with anything that Jonesy was just saying. But the problem I have, and from having been there in person in 2015, you had more of a commitment, I think at least, more of a commitment in 2015 for the FIBA Americas qualifier in Mexico City when you had Tristan Thompson and Corey Joseph and Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Olynyk, and you had all those guys 4 years ago for a qualifier. This was the World Cup.
Right.
And you still didn't get commitment from a couple of guys, let alone three or five or seven guys.
Big difference in travel, though.
100%. Yeah. Huge difference. And to Jonesy's point, contract situations are different.
Time of the year, too.
Absolutely.
You come back, and you're 2 weeks into training camp.
Look, I'm not
right?
saying yeah. there aren't factors. I just thought it was a little bit disturbing that there were so few that committed. And what did we hear in 2015? Fact or fiction. We heard about, whether it's contracts, whether it was geography, whether it was location, whether it was the head coach, whether it was management, whether it was the culture, whether it was the history. Well, there was a new coach this year. There's a new management team. There's apparently a new culture. There's a new vibe around the whole thing. You're coming off the success of basketball in this country, and the Raptors win the championship, and the Raptors head coach taking over as the new head coach. There's so many positive things, and you would assume positive reasons going forward, and all of a sudden, he's not playing, and he's not playing, and he's not
and
playing.
And awfully discouraging to think that yeah. 4 years later, you're actually going backwards.
Yeah.
You know, which is going against the other great current for basketball in
Absolutely.
This country, and you're going against the flow. Like that. That is, you know, however you want to slice it. And obviously, yeah, time zones, travel, all of that stuff was problematic this time. But you did go backwards. And I can't put a bow on that, right? That's not good. It's discouraging.
Yeah, and I don't know how it gets fixed. I mean, we've talked or even joked about we need another hour just on Canada basketball, mm-hmm. let alone 2 hours to try and figure out. Because, you know, you've been involved in the program, Jonesy, over the years at various levels. And it's continued to be an issue. For what, decades now?
Yeah. And, Jones, you said something there. I mean, like, when guys leave here early to play, when they're going to play prep somewhere else, when you're losing guys, you know, relatively early, does that work against building a basketball culture here in any way, do you think?
Well, I think it kind of changes the wiring.
Yeah.
You know, like, people say, well, the hockey guys would never do that. Well, you know, all the guys that played for Canada were probably in some provincial
yes
minor system mm-hmm. all wanted to be on the world junior team
yep
you know like they it's just it's the way the funnel works, it's the way the wiring is connected, and it was like that back in the day. But now basketball, there's so many other ways to kind of accomplish what you want, and sometimes the path that takes you through Canada is not it.
But you're also accomplishing it kind of as an independent contractor, right?
Totally. And, yeah. That's just it, Brent. I mean, I'm up here in high school, and I get a call, and I'm going to go to, you know, IMG, mm-hmm. or I'm going to go to Oak Hill, or, you know, I'm going to go to Findlay Prep or something, and then you're kind of removed.
Yeah.
You're kind of removed, yeah. and your focus changes, and that's not a bad thing, but it doesn't always come back to, you know what, I want to play for those guys. That good, bad, indifferent, that's kind of the way it is.
Or with those guys, right? Or with those or guys that you've played with.
Now,
right?
With is huge
yeah.
because when you look at Kelly Olynyk and Corey Joseph and those guys, I mean, they played together for a long time. So, I just think it's the wiring. That's what it is.
I wanted to ask you guys about Nick Nurse and the season coming up for him. We saw, it was a pretty uneventful training camp other than the contract extensions, but we saw that little snippet where he felt the need to, I'm not going to say go off and Stanley Jeff, but he essentially said that some of the new guys who are playing for positions
yeah.
on this team need to realize that, you know, we expect a certain level of work, we expect a certain level of stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah, you got to step it up.
Yeah. No disrespect to Nick Nurse. Was that real, or was that sort of Nick... Did you notice that, or was that sort of Nick saying, okay, I got to send a message? That, you know, there's only so many things I can do to send a message with this group, because most of them know me. Most of them have been back. I got to do this.
I think it was real.
Okay. You know what I'm getting at,
yeah,
though, right?
No,
as
I
opposed to a coaching, something out of the coaching manual, this was him looking at it and saying, I got issues.
You can kick my shins under the table and tell me if I'm walking too close to or over a line here. Because we were lucky enough over the last couple of years to be able to watch some of the practices and some of the scrimmages over training camp and throughout the season at shoot-arounds and whatnot. And let's just say that wasn't the first time that I've seen Nick Nurse
All right.
Lose his cool or kind of go after somebody.
You guys know. If he said it in the media,
yeah.
he's probably said it behind closed doors at some point.
Yeah, but it's different, right? And when you say it in front of the press, you know exactly what the effect yep. is going to be, and... You know, you break a bit of a covenant with players. Like
you essentially volunteer, too.
Well, that's what I mean. But you do it, coaches do it intentionally because, you know, they know it's going to loop back. And you can do whatever. You can scream at guys behind closed doors. No one knows, right? And
yeah.
And that's, again, part of the covenant with players. Do it, you know, do it directly to us. Don't do it through the
sure.
media. So if you do it through the media, it's got an entirely different effect.
Progressive discipline, though, right? Like,
yeah.
Hey,
mm-hmm.
man, like, you know, and look, I'll say this, going back to what I said, I don't know, half an hour ago when we started, if the Raptors have established this culture, then the new guys coming in need to understand, hey, this is how we do things. This is how we do things. And I don't know where you were before, but we've won, and we've won doing it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So we do it this way. I mean, think about, like, what's going on in Miami. You talk about culture. Mm-hmm. James Johnson, they sent him home because he wasn't in shape. Now, from what I hear and talking to people, he killed the fitness test. He did everything right. He missed weight. He didn't make weight. So they suspended him from training camp. Go home and get in shape. You can't even use our place. Go find somewhere else and get in shape.
Go to Gold's Gym.
And
yeah.
that's, you
yeah.
know why? Because that's the way Pat Riley does it. And you go there, you understand that. So
and what Nick Nurse said also, it wasn't inaccurate. I mean, albeit it's only preseason,
mm-hmm.
but when you watch those games, sitting courtside on the baseline, the two guys that stood out when I was watching those games in Tokyo, in a bad way, the two that stood out were Stanley Johnson and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Right.
Because you're keeping an eye on a new guy in Matt Thomas, and you're watching him shoot. Say, okay, yeah, you know, his stroke is pretty good. And maybe you're giving him a little more slack because he's a rookie, because he's mm-hmm. new, and you're looking past maybe some of the defensive liabilities because you know he's there just to be a shooter. And you're looking at Terrence Davis and thinking, wow, this is another rookie, another young kid. He's got good athleticism. So maybe you're not seeing some of the warts because your eyes are open to some of the good things he's doing. Established veteran guys that have been in the league for a few years that are coming in as alleged defenders that are joining a defensive-minded team that you're hoping are going to take the roles of the two defenders in Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, they're the ones that you're saying, hey, you should understand. You should know. You guys could be potentially plugged in, one or both of you, into starters' roles, if not significant rotation roles, and you see those warts that much more. They stood out in a bad way, I think, in both of those games, and that's why I think it was legit in the sense that, yeah, they have been struggling. They do need to step it up because they do need to be important as this season goes on. They can't lean on a lot of these youngsters, I think, as the year goes on, in spite of the core they have back. They're going to need, you know, contributions from Johnson and Hollis-Jefferson.
It is a Writer's Block Raptors Roundtable. Boy, that's tricky to say. Jeff Blair, Stephen Brunt, Eric Smith, Paul Jones. They'll have the call of the game tonight. You heard the gentleman mention Terrence Davis, a little bit about Matt Thomas. We'll take a look at some of the new Raptors and what you guys can expect from them tonight and through the rest of the season. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it is Writer's Block. We are outside the Real Sports Apparel store at Scotiabank Arena. We will be here up until 5 o'clock. Tim and Sid will take over at that point in time. Tonight's Raptors game is on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet. And a reminder that Tim and Sid will have Bobby Webster, the general manager of the Toronto Raptors, on. Eric Smith and Paul Jones will have the call of the game tonight, and we're very pleased that these gentlemen have taken time out to talk to Stephen Brunt and myself. Doug Smith of the Star joins us later on as well. We'll talk a little World Series at 3 o'clock with Jeff Passan of ESPN. So,
Blair, I thought of you with the World Series with the Nationals in there.
The Expos time.
Tracing the lineage, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like, I got asked about that today.
Sort of.
You know what? It's weird. Somebody asked me today about, do you think there's any Expos tie with the Nationals? I said, nah, for people in Montreal, there isn't.
No.
I probably feel it a little bit because I covered the team in Montreal, then I moved here, and I've kept in touch with, you know, guys like F.P. Santangelo and that, so I probably feel a bit. But now, people in Montreal don't.
No, they don't.
They moved on. They're waiting for the Rays to get there and bringing that team back. This last segment, I wanted to ask you guys about, you know, about the newcomers we're going to see this year. And I feel like OG Anunoby is a newcomer, essentially. He's going to have to reintroduce himself. But what about some of the other guys? You know, do we have the makings here? If we operate under the assumption that with Kawhi gone, things are going to have to change a bit, is there another bench mob in the works here?
Not a full five, I don't think.
Well, and not you know, that bench mob.
Do you need a bench mob with the way you're?
It would help.
Okay.
I mean, it would help in the regular season. I just think that last group, too, what people forgot was that was the year that the Raptors decided to really kind of make a shift in philosophy offensively, right? Shoot the three, like play inside out, but go more towards a quicker pace and all of those things. And when they lost, those five kids who basically had played at 905 together, when you think about Pascal and Jakob and DeLon and Fred, and like they started like a week after the season ended playing that style. And they played it in Vegas at Summer League. And when Summer League was over, they worked out and they played that style. So when you got to October, they'd been doing it for 4 or 5 months.
They weren't just your next five best guys.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
They were like almost, as we know now, a self-contained unit with a style, a personality, and an identity. So I'm not sure we're going to see that because they didn't have the same developmental track that the other guys
right.
did.
Yeah, it makes sense. So when we're talking about 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, that how like that the what's that rotation going to look like?
I still think, and it's going to be fluid to some extent, I think, but I think more often than not, I believe the starting five is going to be Lowry, Van Vliet, Gasol, Siakam, Ananobi. So then your first two would be Powell and Ibaka, I would assume, at the wing and at that forward spot, forward slash center. I'm interested to see who that eighth guy is and who that ninth guy is, because that's, as we were talking 10 minutes ago, that could have or should have been easily Stanley Johnson and or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. And as the season goes on, it likely will be. But Nick Nurse, a number of times, Jones, over the course of training camp preseason, has continued to mention Patrick McCaw's name a ton. And the flexibility he's got with McCaw to be able to play the point and play at that 2-3 slot, which is sort of interchangeable anyways. And I'm really interested to see what becomes of Terrence Davis. I don't know if he'll be given enough time to make that much of an impact, but I think the kid's got a ton of upside on both ends of the floor, defensively with his quickness, offensively with his athleticism, and again, the ability to play multiple positions. I'm really intrigued by him.
And Nick's not afraid to give a guy a chance.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing you have to think about with Terrence Davis. And
well, also, Nick's really playing with house money a bit this year, isn't he? He's lost his best player. And if he decides he's going to experiment, most people are going to go, yeah, man, have at it. We got a title. We don't acquire. Have at it.
And McCaw, to Eric's point, McCaw's a guy that people don't talk about, but he really is a good player. He's a good defender, particularly on the ball. He facilitates well on offense. I mean, he's the kind of guy you like to play with in the playground, that he moves the ball, and when he shoots, more than likely, it's going in because he's not taking a bad shot. So don't downplay his impact either.
Gentlemen, we really appreciate you doing this. As you know, we appreciate your time all season long. We did last year. We did the season before. We certainly will again this year. We look forward to your call tonight. Have a great season. And
hey, enjoy again. The night. You guys should
enjoy the night. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
They don't come along that often, you know?
Like the Comet, man.
There might be some surprises in store tonight during the game, too, in terms of presentations and that, I think. Yeah?
I think so. Keep it tuned. There'll be a few surprises.
I think
there'll
be a few surprises. Guys, thanks so much for doing
this. Thanks. Thank you.
Eric Smith and Paul Jones again. Sportsnet 1, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We will have tonight's game. Tim and Sid will be in Jurassic Park from 5 to 7. We'll come back and talk a little World Series with Jeff Passan. The Houston Astros found themselves in a public relations pickle. They made a hash of getting out of it, and apparently they've taken another attempt to get out of it. We'll talk to Passan about that. It's writer's block. Live from Scotiabank on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 360.
Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. 360, although today we are not on 360. We are on location outside the Real Sports Apparel store.
They built a wall around us now, which is good.
Scotiabank Arena.
We're now behind, behind bars.
I've been inviting people to come up and say hi to Brunt.
No, they can't get past the wall now. Look at this.
I know.
We have a structure in front of us.
You were concerned about that.
No, it's good. I like the structure.
Yeah, I don't care. You're a man of the people. Really?
I am indeed.
Yeah, you can wave at us if you want. Wave at Brunt. You don't necessarily have to wave at me. Although I'll wave back for the most part. Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1 will be your home tonight for the Raptors as we celebrate the Raptors NBA Championship. Pre-game ring ceremony for the players and executives. The raising of the banner tip-off, according to the Raptors, is expected to be around 8:02.
More importantly, according to Jonesy, I believe Jonesy.
Yes, if everything goes according to plan, and we're led to believe there will be the usual address of the crowd by one of the Raptors players. So if you're coming down tonight, make sure you get here early. Make sure you're in your seats. A lot of you have never seen this before from a Toronto team.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us wonder if we'll ever see it again. So get down here and celebrate the NBA title with the Toronto Raptors as they take on the New Orleans Pelicans. The World Series begins tonight in Houston, the Houston Astros and the Washington Nationals. And generally, Stephen, Major League Baseball has been in it's been in a pretty good run lately in terms of avoiding around its signature events, in terms of avoiding the controversies we used to see with steroids, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However, the start of the World Series tonight will be played against a rather unfortunate and completely unnecessary backdrop. Of course, Toronto fans will know that Roberto Osuna, the Astros closer, was traded from Toronto after charges against him were dropped. Domestic assault charges were dropped by him, but it was pretty clear he was not going to be able to pitch for this team. He was traded to Houston. There was a great uproar. The Astros made a commitment to spending money or making donations to women's causes in Houston as a result of this. And Roberto Osuna has gone on, and pretty good year for the Astros. He's been a very good player for them.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, this issue hasn't come up. After the Astros won the American League Championship Series, Brandon Taubman, who is an assistant general manager with the team, was heard making comments in the direction of female reporters. Thank God we got Osuna. I'm so bleeping glad we got Osuna. And
This is in the wake of him giving up a game.
In the
top of the ninth inning.
Right. So and this
is an odd time to be saying that.
Well, it's, yeah. It's just not necessary.
And not just kind of saying it, but kind of hollering at it.
Hollering it. And Stephanie Epstein of SI wrote about it. Other reporters have corroborated the story. The Astros issued an original press release that. On the list of stupid press releases I've seen sent out, might be the most tone-deaf. They have issued another release today, or in point of fact, they released a couple of statements, one from Brandon Taubman. This past Saturday, during our clubhouse celebration, I used inappropriate language, for which I am deeply sorry and embarrassed. In retrospect, I realize that my comments were unprofessional and inappropriate. My over-exuberance in support of a player has been misinterpreted as a demonstration of a regressive attitude about an important social issue. Those that know me know that I am a progressive and charitable member of the community and a loving, committed husband and father. I hope that those who do not know me understand that the Sports Illustrated article does not reflect who I am or who my values or my values. I am sorry if anyone was offended by my actions. Well, a lot of people were offended by his actions. A lot of people wrote about it. Jeff Passan of ESPN, our next guest, was one of those who wrote a very pointed criticism of the Astros for this, and we're very pleased to be joined by Jeff Passan. I guess at some point, maybe somebody will ask Brandon Taubman, why? Jeff? Like, what is, you know, I mean, there are a lot of things you can do during a celebration when you're spraying champagne and dripping beer. I mean, I saw a lot of weird things when the Blue Jays were celebrating.
No one ever did the "Thank God we just got the guy who almost cost us the game" yell right after. That's an interesting one.
Yeah. What is this, Jeff? What does this all mean? Is this just, you know, is this something, a problem with Major League Baseball? Is it just, you know, a jackass working for one organization, a tone deaf organization? How do you describe this? And it really has. You know, it's a talking point right now ahead of the World Series.
Yeah, and it's so remarkably irresponsible and yet so completely Houston Astros to do. Because the Astros' institutional mantra is arrogance. They believe that they are right about everything. And when it comes to baseball, they're right about a lot. That's why they're here. That's why they're favorites in the World Series right now. But I think Evan Drellick at The Athletic put it really well, and I'm paraphrasing him here, but he said the Astros have figured out how to win baseball games. They just haven't figured out people. And that is what this illustrates right here. The way that they're spinning it and continue to spin it as if Brandon Taubman was yelling in support of Roberto Osuna after he blew a save. Let's just consider this possibility. Let's take him on his face and believe him. If that is the case, don't you believe the assistant general manager for a team is not going to scream it out in the clubhouse with the player further away from him than he is the reporters, that he's going to go up to the player himself in a private moment and say, "I'm really glad we got you"? That's just the idea that the public is going to believe this line of thought is so counterintuitive and so against logic and reality that it's embarrassing, and that they double down on it with this statement. I mean, anytime you start something, "I'm sorry if," as opposed to "I'm sorry that." "I'm sorry that I did this action," not "I'm sorry if it offended people," is the right tack to take here.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on that particular set of weasel words, for sure. Tell me about Brandon Taubman.
Brandon Taubman is a guy who came from investment banking and joined the Astros organization. He's young. He's a really bright guy. He's ascended through the organization sort of at the side of Jeff Luhnow. And I don't know if he was ever going to get a general manager's job in the game, but AGMs in Houston tend to be on that track. David Stearns with Milwaukee was Jeff Luhnow's first hire as assistant general manager. Mike Elias with the Baltimore Orioles was an Astros assistant general manager. So this is somebody who's prominent in the organization and has a lot of pull. And I think that's part of the reason why the Astros came out as tone deaf as they did in supporting him immediately. I think that he's one of their guys, and they felt like they look at the outside world and its perspectives and opinions and don't want to act like it matters. They run the organization in a vacuum, and that vacuum sucked them up and spun them around inside of the bag all day. And honestly, I don't think these statements do a whole lot to make the situation better. I think it just looks like more spin.
Jeff, can you talk a little?
There doesn't seem to be any sincerity in them. It seems like they're trying to follow PR 101, which is apologize and hope that the apology, absent of whatever context it may have, suffices.
Can you talk a little bit in general about how the Astros have kind of been able to have it both ways with the Roberto Osuna thing? You know, the Blue Jays, like, you can interpret it any way you want. Either it was they did a cost-benefit analysis and said this guy's too toxic, you know, in the marketplace, we have to get rid of him, or they made a moral choice or some mashup of those two things. But after he was charged with domestic violence, and those charges were eventually dropped because the woman, the complainant, refused to testify against him. It's always worth noting that. He went to Houston, and you know, there was some talk that the clubhouse wasn't happy about it, that there were players who were unhappy about it. How have they managed to kind of dance around this And you know, I say kind of say, well, we're right thinking and progressive and all of that stuff, much of which is in that statement from Taubman, but also to, you know, to have Roberto Osuna as part of their team.
Inelegantly is the answer. They haven't done a particularly good job of it. I mean, from the moment of the trade, when Jeff Luhnow came out and said, as an organization, we have a zero-tolerance policy for domestic violence. If you have a zero-tolerance policy, you're not going to trade for somebody who is in the midst of a 75-game suspension for a domestic issue. You're just not going to do that. But the Astros feel like they can speak things into existence, regardless of what the outside world thinks. And this is just more of that. I mean, for the entirety of this season, Roberto Osuna, from people inside of the clubhouse telling me this, has been a good citizen and has been a good teammate and has blended in well. But this is always going to hover over him. This is always going to be his reality. And for the Astros to act like time is the thing that is going to make this go away is incredibly naive.
You know what? What I find really, I mean, look, everything about this is disturbing, but this is to your point, Jeff. If Roberto Osuna has been a good clubhouse citizen, you're right, we have nothing to suggest that he hasn't been. If I'm Roberto Osuna, I'm sitting there thinking, my assistant GM just kind of dragged this up on the eve of the World Series. Like, I've got an issue with the front office if I'm Roberto Osuna, to be honest.
Well, I guess, yeah. I don't know if he's... maybe.
Seriously.
Now, he also, and again, I don't know if we were explicit about this for people who haven't read the story, but he did it, you know, in front of a group of female reporters as well, right? So that there's another layer of context to this. But, yeah, go ahead,
Jeff. Let me just jump in here for a second, Stephen, and say if he did this in front of a group of male reporters, it would be just the same.
Sure.
Like, listen, that adds context to it, particularly when one of the female reporters was wearing a purple bracelet in support of domestic violence victims and domestic violence awareness. And I think that is context that cannot be lost in this. But at the same time, what he said, the words matter even more than the context, because the words are what he felt in the situation. And the words are going to be on his epitaph. Because he spoke them, and he has to own them.
So, is there any indication, or do you have any indication, Jeff, we may never know this, but will Major League Baseball take any action against Brandon Taubman here? I mean, it's nice that the spin has been done by the organization, and the owner, Jim Crane, has, you know, sort of re-upped his commitment to supporting women's causes in Houston. But if you're Rob Manfred, do you look at this and do you take some action? Or, as you said, you know, this guy's probably screwed himself out of any future employment as a general manager and sort of leave the damage at that.
I don't know. I think it's difficult to see a situation where somebody screws up and the personal damage is all that's done, because doesn't that say to people in the future who do things like this that the consequence is only going to be of your own doing, that the league as entirety, as a whole, really the shepherds of the sport, aren't going to say anything or do anything about it? I cannot imagine a scenario in which there is not a fine and or suspension here, and it will be completely deserved when it happens.
No, I'm with you. I think they have a hard time just letting this lie fallow, and maybe especially because, you know, the commissioner is going to be very visible the next few days. This is their
their
culmination event. This, you know, and people are going to be asking those questions, can be very focused the next few days. I have a hard time thinking Rob Manfred can just kind of walk from this. That would seem impossible to me at this stage. Again, I'm not sure what the management's going to be, but he's got to say something.
He could. He just shouldn't. And I hope that the people around him, if he does not know that already, are reminding him of it.
What are you looking forward to on the field in this World Series, Jeff? What you know? We know the storylines: great starting pitching, good lineups, you know, guys with great two-strike approaches, et cetera, et cetera. What's going to tell the tale of this series, do you think?
I mean, I hate to follow the narrative here, but I think starting pitching is going to go a long way, just because it is such a distinct strength of both teams. And the lineups and the approaches against these starting pitchers, getting deep into counts, forcing them out of the game early. I think whichever team ends up with the most innings from starting pitchers in this series is going to be the team that wins. And I know that's kind of reductive to say, but it's 2019. You have the Tampa Bay Rays, who at one point last year did not have, literally after they traded Chris Archer, did not have any starting pitchers. And they were over 500 this year with their bullpenning approach, almost beat the Astros in the division series. So there is a way around that, but I think in this particular series, it's going to be vitally important for the starting pitchers to get deep into games, because while the Astros bullpen is stronger and deeper than the Nationals, it's not to the point where you look at anybody there and say, this person is impermeable. This person cannot be scored upon. I think everybody in the Astros bullpen, maybe aside from Will Harris, has given up at least a run this postseason. And while A.J. Hinch has a lot more confidence in this bullpen than he did in his 2017 version, when that really consisted of starting pitchers, Charlie Morton, Lance McCullers, at the same time, going to them, it's going to make your heart skip a little bit. And we saw that when Osuna gave up the home run to DJ LeMahieu.
Is, you know, I wonder, you know, is in any way the kind of lesson for the rest of baseball here? I was, you know, this is a crazy great starting pitching matchup, and you know, historically good. But all of those, I'm trying to think now, other than Strasburg, is there a homegrown pitcher in this group in terms of the starters? Like, is the message go out and buy pitching? You know, like, develop, you know, draft and develop your position, guys, but then go spend money on pitching.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly the message. And, I mean, if you
kind of what the Cubs did, too, isn't it, Jeff?
It's 100% correct. That's exactly what the Cubs did with John Lester, and trading for Kyle Hendricks and bringing Cole Hamels and trading for Jose Quintana. I mean, signing Yu Darvish. I mean, that's exactly what the Cubs did. And it worked back in 2016. It hasn't really been great the last few years, but I think starting pitching has not been the least of the Cubs' concerns, but it certainly hasn't been toward the top of the list. And you see the aggressiveness with which Jeff Luhnow's gone out and traded for guys. You know, he got Verlander a few years ago, then he got Cole a year back, and he got Greinke this year. And those are going to be the first three guys pitching for the Astros in the series, and it's no coincidence.
Do we know if Rob Manfred has ordered the juiced baseballs for this series or the deader baseballs?
I hope so. I like home runs, man.
Yeah. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but when it comes to that, I'm rather intrigued by it. And hopefully at some point we'll find out. Mr. Passan, we're going to let you scoot. Great of you to do this. Enjoy the World Series.
I shall, boys. You do the same. And everyone listening, enjoy the baseball as opposed to the extracurricular stuff.
Take care. That's Jeff Passan of ESPN.
Yeah, it's still, you know, it's worth it. Look, enjoy the baseball for sure. I think this is a great, you know, really, really intriguing matchup in a bunch of ways. The pitching matchup is, you know, as Buck said yesterday, might be the best in 50 years.
I did check, by the way. I just want to interrupt for a minute. Our friends at FanGraphs did a breakdown of pitching matchups based on WAR.
Yeah.
Buck nailed it. 1966.
Okay.
Guess what the second one was? This blew me away.
No idea.
Yankees and Marlins, 2003, in terms of WAR.
Okay.
And then this is third. So, there you go. It is very much about the starting pitcher.
Yeah, which is so that, you know, it's an old school baseball discussion, and although that, you know, that series was not long ago, but it does feel like a kind of a long ago way of looking at the, you know, baseball playoff series. But in terms of extracurriculars, let's watch the baseball. But, you know, it's worth trying to hold people's feet to the fire. And what that guy did in those circumstances is, you know, despicable and, you know, arrogant is and
arrogant is
and all of that stuff. But it's also, you know, sometimes you got to hear, it's worth hearing what's being said to understand, you know, how the world operates.
That is a fair point.
And that's so... Go back, anybody, and go read the stories, and read, especially read the first person accounts by the people who were in the room, and then read the Astros' two mealy mouth statements, and then feel free to make up your own mind about who's telling the truth.
We are about 4.5 hours away from tip off at Scotiabank Arena, the New Orleans Pelicans against the Toronto Raptors, the start of the 2019-2020 season, the beginning of the Toronto Raptors title defense. Doug Smith of the Star has been there for every one of the games they've ever played. I'm just kidding. pretty damn close, though. Doug Smith will join us. It's Writer's Block with Blair and Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360.
Need a leg up in your picks? Oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddshark.net has those too, and it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks, whether you want to get it on the football action, tonight's hockey game, or anything in between. Go to oddshark.net. This is not a gambling site.
More Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're outside the Real Sports Apparel store at Scotiabank Arena ahead of tonight's Pelicans-Raptors game. Jeff Blair, Stephen Brunt at his Writer's Block, joined now by one of our favorites and a man who fits in very well given the title of this show, Doug Smith, longtime basketball writer.
Because I got that Writer's Block thing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we all have writers.
No, you know, you work for a wire
How
service.
Often do you
can't
have,
you can't have
exactly
Writer's
right.
Block when you work for
no.
a wire
no.
service.
No, hell no.
No.
I got Friday's story written this morning.
I was going to say, I read you seldom have Writer's Block, and if you do, you do a hell of a job disguising it. What's going to be like tonight for you?
Oh, it'll be the most fascinating Raptor ring ceremony I ever saw.
So there you go. That's good.
No, I think it's going to be very emotional. I think it's going to be very, very odd. You know, we have no idea how the people are going to react, or we don't have any idea how the players are going to react. I think it's going to be very interesting to see when the emotion of winning a championship gives way to the reality of the season starting, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
Like, it's going to be, I think the first hour is going to be off the charts.
Yeah.
And I think people might get a little, by the second half, going, okay, there's a level of sameness. But I think that first 90 minutes is going to be fascinating. I expect, you know, they want everybody in their seats by 7:15, which is very odd for a Raptor crowd. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure everybody will be, because you talk to people, they're pumped up to see this. And that's going to be a lot of juice in that building.
Well, and I think there are a lot of people haven't seen this in this city, especially given the age of this fan base.
Well, plus it kind of feels like that parade happened yesterday,
yeah.
right? So
yeah.
that there's been a complete, like, I know everybody took a deep breath over the summer, but that moment, you know, those hours and days after the last game and that crazy scene that day, you want that to just keep going.
Yeah.
So that's what the first hour is going to be like.
Absolutely.
Like, let's extend.
Yeah.
Let's keep that going and keep the feeling, right?
Yeah, it's going to be the same thing outside here when they're watching on TV, and they have the 2-5 installation is sort of new and unique and gives an edge to it, which I think is very cool. And I think the people will, again, be that same collective joy that we saw in late June at the parade in the last 4 or 5 days of the series.
What are you most interested in seeing once the basketball starts this year, Doug? What intrigues you the most about the 1920 Raptors?
Well, I think they got 7 really good guys, and then I think they got 6 guys who are the same. And I want to see which 3 of those 6 become the guys they can count on. I don't think we're ever going to see 5 subs on the floor at the same time.
No bench.
It's not going to happen. No
bench. No,
can't happen, because the personnel's different, the game is different, the style they play is a little bit different. But I don't know. Nick Nurse doesn't know who those 8, 9, 10 guys are going to be. You know, they got the 7 guys, and maybe Pat McCaw's one. Maybe Chris Boucher is one. Maybe. And then past that, you have no idea. It might take 20 games to shake out.
Are they going to be good enough to have the kind of the leeway to experiment?
Yeah,
he experimented a ton last year.
He did. And
kind
by
of
force, too. Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Had to. We had a lot of guys missed a few games with injuries. Kawhi missed 22 with the rest and a couple of injuries. So he needed to sort of make things up as he went along then, so I think he will again. And I think it's going to be – they're going to get a little grace period with the people.
Yeah.
Plus, they're still – those 7 guys are really good. Like, people keep asking me, how many games are they going to win? I think the other question is, I don't see this – I think this team is too good to lose 30 games.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, you got to win 52, because those 7 guys are tough, and they play really, really well together. And I think – that's going to carry them until they figure out that back end of the rotation. And then when the playoffs come, those guys are going to disappear and they're going to play 8 guys.
Sure.
Yeah, we were saying when Jonesy and Eric were here just a little while ago, the one X factor would be one of those 7 guys getting hurt. Like
right.
One of the significant guys in that group.
Yeah, missing an extended period of time, like a 20-game chunk as opposed to 4 or 5.
Then it's a different conversation.
Then you don't know. Then maybe – If one guy gets hurt or two guys get hurt in the first half, then does Mazzai pull the trigger on all those trades in February?
Well, that's the question. Eh?
And you don't know that because we've seen he'll do it, and we've seen the ruthlessness of Mazzai is there. He'll do what he has to do. We saw it with DeMar. We saw it with Marc Gasol and Jonas Valanciunas last year in February. And I think if some key player misses a huge chunk of games, it might accelerate the stuff I think he's going to do next summer.
Yeah.
And then the end of the season is, okay, can we scrape into 6, 7, 8 and see if we can steal
the
series?
With the fans, that's what I think would be traumatic.
Yeah.
Like, that would be, you know, half a year after that parade, suddenly going, hang on a second, we're shipping guys out, we're not bringing guys in.
Yeah, are we going to make the playoffs? Are we going to be in there again? Are we going to win 44 games instead of 54? Yeah, I think that would be a crushing blow. And in this city, if the pucks are good in February, then who knows? Then the dynamic maybe changes even a little bit more.
Yeah, but the flip side of that is Masai's bought himself so much grace.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, that you know, he can essentially do whatever the hell he wants. This people are going to believe.
This is a free year. He could move them all in February and say, trust me. And the people go, yeah, of course we do. Here, take some money. Take my money. We'll trust you.
How important was it for the Raptors to get Pascal Siakam done now, get the extension done now, even though they could have done it next year, but just because of that, like, to me, and this gets to Brunt's point about Masai essentially being able to do anything. He can also do anything because he's say to fans, I mean, if he really wants, people get upset. I mean, there's the next guy here.
Yeah,
I've committed to one of your guys.
It was a signal to Pascal, obviously, but it was a signal to the team that okay, we'll take care of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Fred's up for one next summer, so maybe Fred VanVleet gets a big, you know, not absolutely maximum payday, but a big chunk of money. And I think it sends a signal that they're not going to just retool. They're going to stay. They're going to build on. And here's the guy we're going to build on, this kid we found, 27th pick, buried him in Mississauga, was the most valuable player in a playoff for the G League 3 years ago, and now could very well be an NBA All-Star. And I think this the signal to the players and to the fans is, okay, here's our next wave. Here's where we're going. And getting it done now, it takes them out of the free agent camp or class next summer, which is trash. So it doesn't matter. Yeah. He's spending money.
We were talking a little bit yesterday about just what a unicorn Pascal is in terms of, you know, a guy, because the deal kind of cements what he is and what they think he is. There's no other of him.
I can't think of one. You know, we were going through this the day the news broke Saturday, I guess, that he had signed. We can't think of another. We don't know what position he is. Like, is he a center? Is he a power forward? Is he a wing?
He's a true positionless player for a positionless era.
I think he really is. Because
But find me a non-lottery guy that's got that kind of deal, too.
That's got a deal that the maximum value for 4 years. I can't think of one outside the lottery in the last...
Like, forever, I think.
Probably 10 or 12 years that I can think of top of my head. But this is a 27th pick. This is not even close to the lottery.
Yeah.
This is, like, in the back half of the first round. Like, this is an amazing find. And he's developed into this bizarre player for the 2020s. Like this guy who can do a little bit of everything. And you can build your team around him because you don't have to fill in with four specific players. You got to get four good players and let them figure it out around his skills.
Yeah, one of the points, I think Grange made this point yesterday about Pascal, is it got to your point about just how his skill set is so unique that you can essentially go whatever direction you want with him. If you're saying 2 years down the road, we have to reconstruct this thing for one reason or another, you can almost go anywhere with him. Maybe let him handle the ball more.
Well, I think we're going to find out this year early whether he can. I think he's going to run some point guard. He's going to run the team sometime, a lot of times.
I love. I mean, I love that idea.
I mean, he's a matchup nightmare. I think he's like a better shooting Ben Simmons, for goodness sake. Mm-hmm. I mean, as good a passer, but a far better shooter. And a far better guard. He's a tough guy to guard. But you could also put him in a block and let him sort of slither around and get in the paint. And I swear, getting that spin move, I don't think he has a clue what he's going to do. But then he scores. And I don't think he's ever had a real idea when he starts that dribble spin, go left. The ball gets in a basket. And I don't think he knows how it happens, but it does. So you build around. You can put shooters around him. You can put ball handlers around him. You can put big, strong guys around him. Or you can let him be that inside presence. I think the options are unlimited in the summer of 2021 and a little bit next summer, but the summer of 2021 when a big class of free agents is up there. Mm-hmm. These guys might have $95 million to spend. Like, you're looking.
Yeah.
And the name, Giannis is the guy. Everybody's thinking Giannis, but there might be other intriguing guys out there, too, that you go, wow, yeah, okay. He's pretty good. He'd fit here.
Well, especially if Pascal keeps improving and you go that route, you know, yeah, you'd like to get Giannis, but maybe plan B isn't bad because the guy you have here is better than you thought he was.
Oh, I think that's the biggest thing. If you've got a seminal, a seminal talent like him, guys want to come play with him. And I think as his responsibility grows this year and next, other players in the league might go, man, it might be fun to play with that guy.
Yeah.
Let's go to Toronto. And I don't think the Raptors have ever had that guy.
Is there any questions, Smitty? And again, this guy's going to be a number one on an NBA team. He hasn't been a number one. Like, again,
ever.
He's got such a weird track. Right?
Ever. Yeah, no idea whether he can do it.
Like, every other guy in that position was that guy in prep school or high school or definitely in their 1 year of college, right? They were. That's who they were. They were the centerpiece of a team.
Yeah.
This guy didn't start playing until he's 15. He's never been that guy in any place, and now he's going to be that guy on a team, just won a championship. Again, we don't have any precedent here,
right?
But, you know, like, what do you give me? You know, give me the crystal ball on that.
The crystal ball is he can. I think he can handle it because everything they've asked him to do, he's handled. And I think that's been the most fascinating thing last year is what, you know, got out of the gate real good, and then about middle of November we're thinking, oh, he can't possibly keep this up. Then he did. Mm-hmm. Then he have a couple of bad games. You think, oh, well, okay, he's going to come back to being the 27th pick and a good player, but not. And then he would like turn it around and go. The NBA Finals, he had like 26-7-7 in Game 6. He's like, he had 32 points in his first playoff game. Everything they've asked him to do, he's done.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to think that he won't. No, but he's never had to, and that's the downside. That's the gamble. Like, maybe he doesn't handle the responsibility of double teams.
It's when the pieces start to fall away around him,
yes,
right?
Yes.
That's you're going to see him. And again, you're right. In 2 years or a year and a half, there may be somebody beside him who's every bit as good,
right,
as much star wattage, right?
Right.
But what we're going to see in the next few months is those pieces are going to, the big one's gone already, but other ones are going to leave.
Other ones are going to leave. Other ones are going to, you know, Kyle's not getting any younger.
Yeah.
Serge Ibaka had a great year last year and looks wonderful this year, but he's also 30 with a lot of miles on him. You don't know for sure. And even guys like OG Anunoby and Norm Powell, you don't know. You think, but you don't know about those guys for sure. Those are the two really intriguing parts to me, because you think they should be, you think OG should be really, really good, but he's never been really, really good. For, you know, he was hurt, he had some family issues. That's all legit. But he's never, ever done it. So now they're asking him to do it on a team that everybody's gunning for. And he's going to be an interesting study.
I think he's going to be fascinating. He was a guy that was ahead of Pascal last year in training camp.
If you'd started at the start of the season last year, OG was definitely going to start ahead of Pascal.
Yeah.
If you had to put one of those two in the starting lineup.
And Norm Powell, we've seen he's been able to rise to the occasion
and disappear for weeks
and disappear for
weeks in a row. So
exactly.
You don't know, but you know they're all both. You know, Norm's 25, 26, he's in the fifth year in the league, so you figure if he's going to get it, you're going to know soon, because if he doesn't, then he's not going to, and you can make a move on him.
Is there a young guy you think, Patrick McCaw is a young guy, but I'm thinking of, you mentioned Boucher, Terrence Davis, where do you stand on those guys, Matt Thomas, how they may fit into this?
I like Davis a lot, because he plays hard, and he can make a shot, and he
does he remind you of somebody? Maybe
a little bit, he doesn't have Fred in him, because he can't handle the ball,
okay.
But I think he plays tough, and the biggest he knows what he doesn't know, and he's willing to learn and not make noise, just do what he has to do. And I think that's the fans are gonna love him, because the kid plays hard and makes a shot, and he's very self-assuming, very quiet kid. Fans are gonna love him. He's a very intriguing bit, I think. I think Boucher is, I don't know. I'm not the biggest Chris Boucher fan out there. I think he's maxed out. I think he'll be a 3-point shooting 6'11" kid who can maybe be your ninth or tenth guy. But he's not going to get any bigger, and I don't think his basketball intellect for defense is going to get any better. And I think that's what's held him back.
What's the conference going to look like around these guys?
Obviously Milwaukee and Philly are good.
Yeah.
Milwaukee's got Giannis, so they're really good. But they don't have a lot of other stuff. You know, they losing Brogdon was a big blow for them. I'm not sure that Philly is any better. I think they're different, obviously, with Horford and Richardson from Miami instead of Butler and Redick.
And they did come within a hair of, you know, winning a series against these
ball
guys.
Ball goes four bounces and goes in. It doesn't go in. They lose in overtime. Then the Sixers maybe are put on a rings tonight. We don't know. But I'm not really sold on them. I think Boston is intriguing, but I don't think they're any better. They're different. You know, they lose Horford and Kyrie. That's a big chunk. Now, maybe that makes Jaylen Brown a better player. and Jason Tatum because they don't have the specter of Kyrie Irving around them. And maybe that's an addition by subtraction thing. And Kemba Walker's a pretty good player. But there's still questions about their mental makeup, their mental toughness, and their ability to play together when it counts the most. And So the East, I think it's there. I really do. I don't see it. I know everybody's high in Milwaukee, and I like them, but I certainly wouldn't make them the prohibitive favorites. I'd pick them to win the conference, finish first in the conference, but I don't think they win the conference championship. And I think that the playoffs are going to be fascinating because a lot of good teams.
One of the subplots to tonight's game we'll be talking about it a bit, but we won't be seeing Zion Williamson. There's a lot of concern around the game about this injury. A lot of talk. Look, we saw him playing college. I was just dying to see him on the floor in the NBA.
I'd love to see him play against men. I really would.
As a basketball guy,
I feel cheated that he's not going to be out there. And I know there's no such thing as minor surgery. Because once you start cutting, you've cut. And I understand the scopes are not opening up and you're 6 weeks instead of 6 months. But you're still going in and screwing around with stuff in your knee. And I don't think that bodes well at all. Now, hopefully it's a minor thing. They clean up the meniscus instead of taking it out or trimming it or whatever they do. But you've got a young kid with a unique body. And I'm not saying he's overweight, but he's got a unique torque and unique unique stresses on that body. And if it were already cut into his knee, I'd be a little bit leery. I really would. And he's a fascinating talent when he can play, but he's never played against men. They shut him down in summer league. He didn't play. Played, three preseason games?
How much chatter was there about that and when he was coming out of college? Concern about the body type?
There was concern about, everybody sort of held him up as a sort of Charles Barkley round mound of rebound. He wasn't not the same as that. He wasn't, puffy. But there are stresses on the lower body of a guy that size who plays at that speed that you wonder about the long-term viability of it. And he's a freak. But maybe freaks don't last because they're too freakish. You know what I mean?
There are bodies that, with all the sports science in the world, there are bodies that can't take the stresses. Some guys are not, built in a certain way. To go way back, Bill Walton's feet weren't built to play basketball, right?
Exactly,
And there was no way of changing that. Except him playing through pain the last however many years of his career.
Right.
Some guy, it may be. I want him to be great.
Oh, I want him to be great. So, because he's such an effusive personality, he'd be great for the game. He'd be good for young players to see a young kid be a star. I hope he has a great and long and illustrious career, but you can't be sure of it today.
Yeah. It's too bad. This would have been a blast tonight. It's going to be a blast anyway, but that was
a whole different layer seeing that kid out there because the layup line would have been as exciting as anything else out there.
Smitty, we're going to let you run. It was
all
great
guys,
to
go
do
back
this.
To work.
Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. Anytime. Next time you're in my house, come down and we'll do it again.
We will. Win another title, we may be back.
I can't. You know what they say about the players learn how hard it is, how hard you have to work to win a title?
Yeah.
You know how hard you got to work to cover a title with a team?
Yeah, it's always
guess what?
Man, but you covered that. You were on the Dawn patrol for FIBA this summer.
You had
exhibition games in Asia? My God, Smitty, I'm telling you. You and your bathrobe work harder than anybody.
My dog didn't know what the heck was going on.
Oh, we'll let you run. Doug
all right,
Smith,
guys,
the Toronto Star. It is Writer's Block, Blair and Brent. We're outside Real Sport Apparel Shop, Scotiabank Arena. We'll be back with more on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and 360.
Oh, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, it's Writer's Block, live from Scotiabank Arena. Just outside Real Sports Apparel Shop, it is Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt. Tim and Sid will be in Jurassic Park from 5 to 7. We will have the call of the game tonight, the Raptors and New Orleans Pelicans, at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet 1, a reminder that the Raptors are asking you, if you're coming down to the game tonight, to please be in your seats by around 7:15. There will be a rather lengthy pregame show, a celebration, presentation of rings, raising of the championship banner, Stephen, I wasn't here when the Jays won the World Series, so it's going to be my first banner raising of a Toronto team.
Well, and again, to be fair to the fans of those other teams, we have had the Argonauts win a couple of Grey Cups in the last, within recent memory, and TFC.
I didn't see a banner raised at TFC.
There's one in the stadium, so okay. I'm not sure when they must have done it before the first game of the season. I'm assuming that, and so we will tip our cap to both those teams and acknowledge that they did it. But
yeah, that's different.
Yeah, it is. I'm not saying it's not. This is going to be a big deal. This is a huge deal. This is an international sport, and a global sport. It's the second biggest sport in the world. It's mm-hmm. the best league in the world, and that championship meant a ton. I think tonight is going to be. So we're saying we had the guys on it. I think this is going to be like an extension of that crazy parade mm-hmm. day. I'm not sure when things kind of get back to normal, get down to business here. But I don't think it's going to be game two.
Right.
You're going to have Kawhi come through town. I think that's going to be a big day. I think it might be after Christmas by the time we start talking about kind of business as usual in this NBA season mm-hmm. and what it means. And there's nothing wrong with that. Look,
no,
savor it, wallow in it, remember it. You don't have to move on. These kind of things in your lifetime aren't going to happen all that often.
You know, I was thinking of this as we were coming down here, and we'll be joined in a few minutes, by the way, by Elliot Friedman. And Peter Mansbridge is going to join us at 4:40, and we'll have a little chat about what happened last night. I am, of course, talking about the Leafs.
Well, you know what? We're not going to talk about the election except for the fact we're going to tip our cap to our pal Adam Vancouverden, ABK,
absolutely.
Who was on our late podcast and is a guy we both admire. And he had a big win last night. So, and you know what? You know why he won? Because, again, you and I talked to him before.
Yep.
Big hill to climb. Never done it before. Going up against one of the more prominent candidates in the prominent MPs in the other party. Mm-hmm. And his Vancouverdian crazy determination, right? Like,
yeah.
He's not a guy I would ever underestimate in terms of his will.
When he told us he planned on knocking on every door in the riding, we both looked at each other and said, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And then what are you going to do next week, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, but he's the force of will there. And I know, watching him play, he won by a lot, too.
Yeah.
So, yes, we are politically neutral here on this show, of course, but we're not politically neutral when it comes to him. So,
no, we're very
way to be ABK.
We're very pleased for Mr. Van Kayak. You talked about sort of how we're trying to put this championship into context, and I made the point. I was thinking about this coming down. We're just about to start the World Series, and I think if the Houston Astros win, we can start having a talk about them as possibly some sort of dynastic franchise, and that's kind of it's too early to have that discussion around here by round. But do you think there's a fear, Stephen, of this being a one-off, of this being like an Arizona Diamondbacks World Series? Or are we just going to enjoy it to hell?
Well, number one, enjoy one-off. It. Number two, it was a one-off because that guy's not here anymore. And
that makes it easier, I think.
Yeah, it does make it easier because it's, putting the pieces back together even if he were here is, mm-hmm. like replay last season over again, replay those playoff series over again. Does it come out the same way? Probably not. Like it could or it couldn't, but it would be in question. And but again, I think we alluded to this, especially when Smitty was here. There's enough faith in this organization right now that when it's mm-hmm. that you believe it will happen again. People believe it
oh,
will
yes.
happen again.
Oh,
and that's the thing. Different guys, different time. In a different scenario, but people believe it will or at least could happen again.
No, that's a very fair point, and that's something that's part of the currency that comes when you win a championship. No one can ever say to you, if you're a Raptors fan or a Raptors executive, no one can ever say to you again that you can't win.
Correct.
You can go, guess what?
Guess what?
We did in 2018, 2019. Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada joined us, talk about the Leafs, and we'll get Elliot's take on what the Toronto Raptors championship has done to the sports scene in the city, to the sports dialogue in the city. It's Writer's Block with Blair and Brunt. We're live at Scotiabank Arena on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Unconfirmed sources say this is the best show in the history of sports radio.
You're simply the best.
This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt.
Better than all the
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We are outside Real Sports Apparel Shop at Scotiabank Arena. Jeff Blair, Stephen Brunt ahead of tonight's opener for the Toronto Raptors against New Orleans Pelicans. Tim and Sid will be in Jurassic Park in...
Soon.
About an hour. That is the voice of Sid Sixero.
Rain stopped, right? The weather's picked. It's like it's improved out there. It's looking good. I know you guys have shelter out there. You have Dagan.
No, but I'm a huge baby. It's very important for me that all rain stop and all weather. Because you guys know in this corridor of Maple Leaf Square Jurassic Park, it can get cold pretty quick, regardless of what the weather actually is.
It's a microclimate.
I'm not warriors like you two. I've been to 80 Grey Cups combined in all types of climates.
You have a raccoon coat or something you could wear out there?
I could use it. This is going to be fun tonight, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So can we reveal your guest list? I'm intrigued by your guest list.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I have it in front of me here. Let me just
Are we allowed to say who's coming on?
Well, there's a rumor of someone floating, but I can't.
Oh, Alvin Williams is going to be on. He's always great.
Alvin Williams will be on the
Bobby
show.
Bobby Webster's going to be on. That's
Raptors
a good get.
GM Bobby
That's
Webster.
A nice get. And then there's a third slot here. Hang on a second.
LeVar Burton?
No. Is he still with us, LeVar Burton?
Reading Rainbow?
Is he still with us?
Or Roots? Or
I hate asking that question, but I legitimately
don't. Yes, I believe he is.
Or is he in the Reading Rainbow in the sky?
No, I think he is still.
LeVar?
I believe he's still with us.
There could be a LeVar floating around. I can't confirm or deny. I'd like to say, though.
But it LeVar
good,
Ball?
The good. No, I can't speak of it.
Okay.
The security detail that you guys have here.
Thank you.
Outside
that.
Gate 1 at Scotiabank Arena, because the fans. We're just converging upon
well,
your
got
desk.
Too much.
We had to create some distance.
There's
here.
15 feet of space between Jeff Blair, Stephen Brunt, and the commoners. Because if it wasn't here, it would be complete chaos for you.
You
two.
Saw the metal detectors, too, right? You got to go through metal detector to get in. Did you get through?
Metal detectors. There's legit medical detectors, or both.
Those two.
A little from column A, a little from column B.
You may need a medical detector by the time this segment's over. But that's what it's like when traveling with Brunt.
Yeah,
you know, one gets used to sort of having your personal security anyway, or your personal space invaded.
That's true. If LeVar Ball is on your show, that will be very, very interesting.
I don't know how that would go.
Can you give me a pair
it's
of sneakers?
It's just a rumor. A pair of sneakers?
Yeah.
At cost, apparently.
How many do you want?
Big Baller brand ain't what it used to be a whole year and a half ago.
Yeah, I'll just send your money to the creditors.
Yeah. That's not nice.
It's true.
No, let's keep it positive. Rings will
I don't
be
want to wreck your segment.
Tonight.
I don't want to wreck your segment.
Rings will be. I think a lot of things are going to wreck that segment, Steve.
What's this year going to be like?
I think Kawhi leaving in a strange way is a great thing for these guys. Because A, they're champions. B, people don't believe in him outside of Toronto that much. And C, the chip on their shoulder. Like, the great teams bring in a guy, like the Astros. You guys just talking to Jeff Passan. Astros go out. They win a World Series. Get Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole's a 200-strikeout-a-year guy before he gets to Houston. You bring in that fresh blood. You bring in the talent, who hasn't maybe won. And it creates a new type of atmosphere around the team. With Kawhi leaving, it's immediately created that different atmosphere because there is non-belief. These guys know it. Nurse knows it. Masai knows it. Bobby Webster knows it. You guys know it. There is non-belief around the league that they can even get back to an Eastern Final without Terminator X, number two, walking around there and hitting buzzer beaters against Philadelphia. And I think as a chip on your shoulder, that is invaluable.
Yeah.
That is invaluable
for a team.
It would
have been cool if he stuck around, too.
It would have been the best, and I'm still angry.
But, you know.
Can they hear us out there?
Yeah, they can hear us. Sid's angry.
Are you guys still angry? Are you guys angry Kawhi left? Yes or no? You're angry.
There you go.
Keep it clean. We're on live. You're angry?
Yeah, but the guy's wearing a Dodgers cap. Come on.
This guy said no. I'm going to
ignore
him. Come on.
He's got a Dodgers
Dave
cap.
Dave Roberts, yeah.
So maybe two out of every three Raptor fans are still a little upset that Kawhi left.
It's interesting you talked about the chip in the shoulder because if you read Kyle Lowry's piece in Players Tribune, that's the same. I mean, it's Kyle Lowry, so he
had a chip on his shoulder when he was four.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, the doctor said, excuse me, sir, when he was born, we're just going to move your son's chip off his shoulder and get him out, and then we'll put it back on again. But if you read the Players Tribune piece, it's pretty clear that's one of the narratives that is going to be spun in that locker room by those guys, that no one thinks we can do it again. So
the best thing tonight, and obviously we're not going to get the TNT broadcast on Sportsnet, but you know, you're going to go on social media after the fact, and you're going to hear Chuck, and you're going to hear Kenny, and you're going to hear Shaq, and they're going to set an interesting tone here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know those guys in the Raptors room, like every other NBA player, they listen to what those guys say. And I guarantee you they're going to come out tonight and not be overly disrespectful, but they're going to be honest and say, look, Kawhi was the team.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out. I still think this is at least an Eastern Conference final roster if everyone stays healthy enough. They can get to an Eastern final. Milwaukee didn't get better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They lost Malcolm Brogdon. Yeah. Right? I don't know. Boston? Enes Kanter?
A lot
Kemba
of guys,
Walker? I don't know what the Celtics are at this
it's,
point.
It's like we talked about this with Eric and Paul. I think a lot of Eastern teams kind of took steps sideways. You know, yeah, Horford and Philly? Great. Jimmy Butler was pretty good. He's not there anymore. Same thing, Malcolm Brogdon in Milwaukee. It's just Boston is Boston. Boston's a different team with Kemba Walker, and not having Kyrie Irving. But are they really that much better? Like, I'm with you. I can see the conference kind of going the way it went last year.
Although, with one, I will add one asterisk there, which is that the nobody believes in us thing, which, you know, has been a lot of teams have done that. Most of the teams that have played that card, there was a reason. Right? Like that nobody believed in. Right? So if nobody believes in us, but we're going to show them. Sometimes it happens. You know, and again, rationally in this conference, yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. If you look at the rest of the conference, they're a top four team in the conference, and there's question marks all over the place. But that, the notion that, you know, like sometimes it's good to be the big dog and say, you know, yeah, everybody believes in us. You know, they got to that point by the end of last year where, you know, they played a dynastic team and beat them. You know, you had to believe in them.
And it was an interesting thing to watch in terms of, for years, obviously, nobody can get past LeBron in the East. The Raptors weren't special on that. Mm-hmm. We sometimes forget that in the narrative. And then for 1 year, the Raptors had arguably the big dog.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Giannis, there's a lot of Giannis support out there. But in the end, Kawhi was the better player. Kawhi was the more dominant player. He's now out of the picture. We haven't seen the Raptors in a quote-unquote normal type of conference in a long time where that generational player, it still could be Giannis.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But we haven't seen the Raptors in a quote-unquote normal type of context where there's not a 1-2-3 greatest player of all time sitting there on either side of it just doing their thing. It's going to be a really fascinating moment where Nick Nurse gets to stretch his legs a little bit here, I think.
Yeah. Well, he can experience. He's got carte blanche to do what he wants.
Although he stretched his legs a fair bit last year, too.
No, but if he wants Pascal to handle the ball, led to believe it's going to be the case, he can do it.
But the ball ended up in Kawhi's hands a lot for obvious reasons. Pascal, is he that guy?
I don't know, but as someone asked me this the other day, I said, Masai Ujiri thinks he is? Okay. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because most of the stuff Masai Ujiri thinks will work, works. So I'm willing to go along with
him. Yeah, there isn't another one of him. No. So it's kind of, you know, kind of hard to say what's and, you know, here or in general, right? There's no real precedent for the path that he's taken to become, you know, the number one guy. We've been talking about this since they signed the extension with him. That, like, no other guy with his pedigree has ever signed that deal, ever.
Right. I was driving in listening to you guys with Doug Smith, and I forget which one of you said it. It's true. The parade feels like it was just yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
That was
great. It's been an incredible summer, aside from a really bad Nick Nurse cameo at the Arkell show. No, I don't want to say it was overly
bad. They did plug in his guitar, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And the three chords he played were great, continuously. The summer just kind of flew by. I can't believe we reached this point.
You got another show to get ready
for. Oh, I got
to
go.
Because you got to get – don't forget, LeVar Ball.
There's a rumor. I don't know if LeVar Ball's coming on.
Size 12.
I don't know if I might pitch to be the Canadian face of Big Baller Play. I don't know if any of these things are going to happen. You're going to have to find out at 5 o'clock.
There you go. Go to Jurassic Park, Tim and Sid, and we'll find out. I'm looking forward to it. My guess is he shows up size 12.
Thanks, boys.
All right.
Oh, you think I need a size 12?
No,
God bless you. Oh, you need a size 12. I knew that about you.
Yeah. All righty. Sid Sixero, ladies and gentlemen. Tim and Sid, 5-7 from Jurassic Park.
Stop it. Thank you.
The nice thing about Sid is he's a wilting violet and doesn't play up to the crowd. Which
never.
Really, I really appreciate. Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada now joining us. Hello, Mr. Friedman.
Was that just worlds colliding that I just heard there?
That was something colliding. I don't know. I don't know what it was. It was a collision of some general description. Yes. Yeah, so. Hey, before we talk about, you know, Mike Babcock taking the boys out to the woodshed last night.
Yeah.
How has this city changed? As someone who's been around, look, you covered basketball, you covered baseball, you covered hockey. What do you think the city's changed because of the Raptors? The sports scene in this city has changed because of the Raptors.
Boy, that's a great question. You know, I think I think what we saw last year was incredible. I don't know if the city changed as much as the country changed. You know, the amazing thing was last year when we were sitting at the Stanley Cup final on the off nights and watching the NBA finals games, you had, you know, those of us who live in Toronto, you know, myself, Chris Johnston, Nick, and Dave Amber, and you had those of us who lived outside of Toronto, Kelly Rudy, Craig Simpson, Jim Houston, and we were all watching Raptors together. Like, that never happened before. Like, Huey's from Vancouver, Craig's from Edmonton, and Kelly's from Calgary, and they said there were people in their cities who had never watched basketball before who were watching basketball. I think that was, you know, when I think of last year, that's what I think about. See, I still think if the Leafs win the Stanley Cup, it's bigger in this city than the Raptors winning the NBA title, but it's not bigger in the country, I don't think. I think if the Leafs ever go to the Stanley Cup final, half the country will be hate watching it. But the one thing is, like, this city is, what it showed me last year was this city is just dying for that kind of a celebration. And that was the best thing about it.
You know, I was talking with our Calgary radio guys the other day, and I know you do hits with those two guys too, Elliot. And they asked me that question, you know, kind of where you know, the Raptors v. Leafs thing in the city and how it divides. And I think they assumed that it was still, well, you know, Leafs, and then, but it was, you know, the Raptors had their moment, and that was great. You know, and I started to think about it. And I'm not sure it's not pretty close to 50-50 right now. Like, last time Leafs won a Stanley Cup, I was 8. And I'm not young. So I don't know what that would be like. I've had to think about it over the years about when they got close and kind of thought, well, okay, what would that be like here if that happened now? And they do have a national audience, you know, that's because of the, you know, the legacy of Hockey Night in Canada, that there are Leaf fans all across the country. When you see the ratings, that's where that number comes from, not just from the 416 and 905. But where I'm sitting right now, like, I'm not sure it's not 50-50 now. Like, I'm not sure TV numbers, it's hard to measure, and the TV numbers went crazy, obviously, with the Raptors last year. But, you know, the kind of, you know, if I'm trying to kind of figure out what the zeitgeist is around here right now, I'm not sure they're not even. I have no science to back that up.
I think we're going to know this year the true story, because the expectations aren't as high. Kawhi is gone. I think this is really going to tell where it is. You know what? I know I'm going to be watching tonight. I want to see that banner go up. I don't. You know, to me, as amazing as it is that they won the title, and I remember when that ended, I think my tweet was something along the lines of, I never thought I would see this. It's going to be the same thing tonight. When I watch that banner go up, my reaction is going to be, I never, ever thought I would see this. But the one thing the Leafs have had is the staying power. Good or bad, they get viewers. Now, when they're bad, they're not as high as everybody would like them to be, but they're still solid numbers. I think the tell will be, you know, the Raptors are not expected to be as strong. Obviously, Kawhi isn't here. When they're not competing at the highest level, and I'm not talking about as players, but I'm talking about for the championship, how will they be? But I think how will those numbers be? But I think what we have here is a team that is very big part of the, like, even if it's not the same, they're still a huge part of the city. They're a huge part of the region. And for a lot of fans who feel rightly or wrongly that they just don't connect with hockey, they sure connect with the basketball team.
Yeah, look at me. I may have overstated it, but maybe what I'm talking about is where the trend lines are going too, Elliot. Maybe that's part of it.
You know, the one thing I do agree with, though, Stephen, is that sometimes for the National Hockey League, I wonder, do they take Canada for granted?
Yeah.
like a Canadian team hasn't won the Stanley Cup since the commissioner's first year. The first trophy he handed out was to the Montreal Canadiens. And we have not had one handed out in Canada in a generation now. Like, to me, that's a problem. Now, I don't necessarily think the league is biased against Canada. I don't buy that. But I think that there have been, whether it's the pressures of playing in Canada, whether it's the taxes in Canada, I think it's been harder to get Canadian teams that can consistently take runs at the Stanley Cup. And that, to me, is, if I was the league, I'd be concerned about that. Because after a while, you have to give your fans hope that you can win. And it's been a generation, a whole generation has grown up with a Canadian team not winning. A whole generation has grown up with, I mean, how many Canadian teams even making the final? That is one thing I do look at and say, if I was the league, I would be concerned about that.
Elliot, I want to zero in a little bit on what we saw last night against Columbus. I mean, we're here on, what, October 22nd. The Leafs are at the bottom of the Atlantic Division. They're fourth worst overall in both giveaways, minor penalties. You know, last night, they looked like a young team, and with all due respect, I understand their guys, Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews, aren't ancient by any stretch of the imagination. But neither are they rookies. They are young guys, but neither are they rookies. This, and you know, look, I criticize Mike Babcock for being passive aggressive a lot of times. I mean, I was with him last night in terms of what he said, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, look, like last night, I think I used the NBA analogy in the first intermission. It's like a hot shooter who he shoots you into the game and then he shoots you out of the game. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what happened with those two guys, Matthews and Marner. We saw them at their best. And we saw them at their worst. The first two goals were directly for Columbus, were directly as a result of their mistakes. The goals that tied the game were directly as a result of how talented they both are. And then the overtime winner that they beat Boston, the same situation they beat Boston on Saturday, they lost to Columbus this time because they stayed out on the ice. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot today. If you take a look at some of the other situations, and we'll use a couple in Canada, Patrick Laine was quite open about he wanted to play more with the best players on the top line, things like that. So what are the Jets doing? They're saying, okay, we'll give you the minutes, but you got to show that you deserve them. We'll give you the chance to prove that you can deserve them. And Patrick Laine has been a very different player this year. He is trying to show he has earned that trust. Now you look at Edmonton right now, and you know they're off to a great start. And one of the reasons is that Dave Tippett has looked at his two franchise players and said, I know you're my horses. I am going to let you run with this. Now, the other night when they blew out Philly, he sat them for a lot of the third period, gave them a rest, which they needed. But those two guys, they're responding to it. They want the responsibility. One thing we showed last night was that in the defensive zone this year, Matthews is barely playing. Mm-hmm. And then they had that one goal last night, the 2-0 goal, was because he got caught out there on an icing. You know, the one thing I argue with Brian about is I really believe, Jeff, that Babcock has to turn the team over to those two guys for the short and the long term. Put them out there, live with their mistakes, but make them just say, I'm going to keep throwing you out there, and you guys, by the way you play, will determine how it goes well or not well. I think we're at that point now. I think he has to ride them.
Friedge, good stuff as always, my friend. Thanks so much.
All right, guys, enjoy the game tonight. Have a great time.
Thank you. That is Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada. And just a reminder of the schedule.
coming up on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 1. Tim and Sid will be live from Jurassic Park 5 to 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 and 360. The Pelicans and Raptors, 7 o'clock pregame, 8 o'clock tip-off on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1. The first game of the World Series, 7 o'clock pregame on Sportsnet, 8 o'clock first pitch on Sportsnet Ontario, and as always, our Leafs Nation postgame with Stelic and Al Berger right after tonight's Leafs game around 11 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We heard from our radio crew in the persons of Eric Smith and Paul Jones. Matt Devlin will join us. It's Writer's Block live from Scotiabank Arena on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360.
Oh, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Right. All right, welcome back to Writer's Block on 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Stephen Brunt and Jeff Blair disappeared for a minute, gave me a little bit of a scare, but I brought Matt Devlin in.
Well, yes.
TV voice of the Raptors.
That's good. Maybe he can...
I'm okay with it.
You got company.
So, Mr. Devlin, are you set for this tonight?
I think so. from this standpoint, that when you think about this evening, it truly is. And I've kind of kept this... And you both know this, throughout an unbelievable ride, and when you both sit down to write, it's not about you, the writer, it's about the content in which you're writing. And so that amazing two-month journey was about the players, the coaches, and the fans. And again, I think this evening, that is ultimately what it is about. It is about the players, it's about the coaching staff, management, and certainly... to me, the best fans in the NBA that are going to be not only here but out on Jurassic Park and then watching throughout all of Canada.
I know you had a camp and a preseason, so you have started. But this is where you kind of we've been kind of kicking this around a bit this off. But this is where the parade continues, right?
Right.
Like this is emotionally.
Yes.
This is kind of going back to that.
No doubt.
You know, I know it's how do you know what it's going to be like? 'Cause you've been through it before, but. I still sense that kind of pent-up desire to get back in that space. You know,
right.
People want to be there again. It's like when the 2010 Olympics ended here, you know, and people were emotional about it.
Yeah.
They wanted it to go on for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what you're going to walk into tonight.
Well, I would agree with you. And I would say this also, that I think it was a month after, the championship and the parade, where my wife looked at me and said, "Now, how long does this championship celebration go on for?" And I'm like, "I got a lot of neighbors I got to go see."
Yeah, that's true. No,
they want to tell. They got. I got to sit around and tell stories. So that's what again tonight is about. Though it's another one of those stories that are going to be captured and lasting, and it is another chapter in the book of the conversation that will continue on throughout the course of the season. Because here's the great thing about this, and is because this will live on again when those players that are no longer playing now come here and receive their ring. I would imagine with Kyle Lowry walking out there and handing it to Kawhi or Danny. And so it's going to... I think in that way it's going to be really impactful.
That one's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's standing room only. Standing ovation.
No, it's got to be.
What are you expecting this year? That's a loaded question, but
yeah, I think this team is way better than what people are giving it credit for. I know that a lot of the prognosticators south of the border certainly don't think that this is a team that can do much. I totally disagree with them. And I would also say this, that throughout the course of the playoffs, I know that everybody is always intrigued with what everybody else has to say.
Right.
But let me say this. For those that read a Michael Grange and Blake Murphy and all these guys, they really know what's going on a day-to-day basis with
mm-hmm.
this team.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody south of the border has that day-to-day connection that they have. Now, when you think about this team. I go back to Friday night against Brooklyn, 2.5 quarters, a 7-man rotation with a lot of different versatility to it, playing Serge and Mark together, going big with Pascal in that group as well as OG in that group. Nick Nurse is going to certainly provide a lot of different combinations. The question is this, because when they got after it on Friday night, they got after it. Brooklyn was playing to win that game. It's the final preseason tune-up, right? And the Raptors defensively got after it. They shot lights out, made 24 threes. But the intriguing thing will be who's going to be 8, 9, and 10. And 8, 9, and 10, you need them during the regular season. As we know, you may or may not need them come postseason.
Eric, Paul, Grange, and Smith, Doug Smith, all said that we can expect to see Pascal Siakam doing some ball handling, that we could see Pascal Siakam bringing the ball up, which, and, you know, LeBron James a couple of years ago in the playoffs, that was essentially done as well. How soon do you think we'll see that?
Well, we saw it last year.
Okay,
we saw it last year. That the initiation of that was a rebound in bringing it up.
Okay.
So is the graduation of that ball out of bounds in his hands bringing it up? But I'll never forget early in the year, month into the season, we were out on the West Coast, and it was a legitimate off day after a back-to-back, and I was having a coffee with Nick Nurse, and we're just talking to basketball. And I asked him about Pascal Siakam and the growth of his game. And at that time, getting the rebound and pushing it and going up. But he was struggling with that. And you think about this. Here's a first-year head coach, an immense amount of pressure on him. Here's a player that you're looking to develop, but yet you also want to have some response on a nightly basis. And he said, you know, Matt, if we pull him back now, I don't know if we're going to get what we can get from him. He'll be who we want him to be. He'll be who he wants to be later on in the season. So I'm going to allow for this to happen, obviously, under the guise of we're watching video, people are working with him and all that. And it's just amazing. I've told that story so many times because you think about youth sports and everything. Oh, you made a mistake. Sit down next to me.
Exactly.
You're really going to learn. Oh, really? You're going to learn now because I just missed a shift or I got benched? Or no, it's the nurturing environment around to take the time to talk with them, to explain, to show them, and then allow for them to make a mistake during the context of an 82 regular season that ultimately ends up coming to fruition ultimately last year. There are so many times in the postseason, rebound, boom, and he's taking it. Now the next step, inbound to him and let him actually operate it. So it'll be interesting.
How much Nick Nurse, the experimental Nick Nurse, the improvisational Nick Nurse, you know, he tried a lot of different stuff last year, and he still, you know, he still had the one big guy that he knew was going to be, it was a constant. In this configuration, is this kind of, I'm not going to say liberate him, but he is a guy who likes to change and try things, right?
Well, he was that, as we all know, last year, boxing one, triangle and two, all those different things. Also, the ability against Philadelphia. I credit Masai and Bobby Webster for putting together a roster that was highly versatile with only 15 players that also allowed for the coach to experiment with that versatility. And then ultimately against a team like Philadelphia in hockey terms, they went heavy. They had to play big, right? And they did that, and then they were able against Milwaukee to go back and show some of the things that they were during the regular season. So I think that's who Nick is, right? He's a coach's coach. He's a basketball lifer, not an NBA lifer, and there's a difference, a basketball lifer. You know, he coaches with a little bit of, hey, look it. I've coached in Birmingham, England. I've coached in Manchester. I've coached in South Dakota and Oklahoma. I've coached in Europe. I've coached all over the world. And if I wasn't coaching here tonight, I'd be coaching someplace, right? He just loves to coach. And so he's extremely creative, and I think this is going to allow for him to try all those things.
And it'd be a fun situation for that guy, guy you just described, right?
No question. I think this will allow him. He showed it last year, but continued to show, you know, how good of a basketball coach he is.
Mm-hmm.
First round, Steve Clifford. coach's coach,
absolutely.
Steve Clifford, right? Second round, Brett Brown. Everybody, hey, Brett Brown, Popovich, Tree, whatever. Third round, Mike Budenholzer. Mike Budenholzer was the guy to get, right?
Mm-hmm.
Outcoached him. You talk to people around the NBA, outcoached him. And then you go up against Steve Kerr in the finals, who's one of the brilliant coaches in the NBA. And I thought that Nick Nurse really showed who he was, you know, throughout all those moments. Yes, you need players. I mean, those are the givens.
Matt, we are going to let you run. Rest the pipes. Look, if you don't need it. But we look forward to your call.
Well, thanks I look so forward to it as well. Thank you
thanks,
so much
Matt.
For
thanks,
having
Matt.
Me. Yeah.
Should be a lot of fun.
All
take
the best.
Care.
Yep,
Matt Devlin, the TV voice of the Raptors. 7:15, the Raptors want you to be in your seats tonight at the Scotiabank Arena. Pre-game ceremony set to start. Ring presentation, banner raising, an address to the crowd by a Raptors player as well. Should be a lot of fun. Peter Mansbridge had a busy night last night, and he may have pulled off one of the all-time great baller moves. We'll tell you about it when he joins us. It's Writer's Block with Blair and Brunt on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Reminder that your team could be playing in a game at the Mattamy Athletic Center called by Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, it is the first annual Champions of Rec League Cup. Every weekday, every show, we've been announcing the names of teams, and somebody from the team hears that name, they can call us. And you can also enter online for a chance to be the wild card team. So, today's team for our show is Brian Coho Doherty from Oakville. You nominated and you captained the team Good Buddies. So, if you're on the team Good Buddies, you have 590 seconds to call us at 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590 to qualify for the final or for the voting round of this contest. You can find all details at sportsnet.ca/590. All right, I'm going to bring Peter Mansbridge in now. Peter, thank you so much for joining us. This is not something. This is our producer Travis McKenzie is much younger than me and much hipper. But we were talking about what you managed to do last night on the election coverage, and Travis looked at me and said that was such a baller move, showing up late for the show and having an excuse for it, and then basically saying I'm retired, I can do what I want anyhow. So. Apparently, pulling off a baller move, Peter, is a great thing. Do we have Peter?
Yeah.
Hey, Peter, there you are.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah,
Jeff, I was only 2 hours late. It wasn't like I was that late.
Well, that's fine. No, but I thought it was great. It was perfect.
You didn't miss anything.
No, that's right. Just the votes in your province there, Stephen.
Yeah, well, other province.
We knew all the time what was going to happen in those ridings anyway.
Hey, we got an NDP member out there now. That's a big deal. That's not all red this time. So that's a change.
It is, but it's Jack, right? So
it is Jack.
Everybody
yeah.
in Newfoundland knows Jack anyway. So he's
absolutely
he's one
true.
Of the guys.
Everybody in Newfoundland knows everybody in Newfoundland, right? I mean, you guys are just you're talking about a guy on a first name basis here. You've probably all had dinner with Jack at one point, right?
I haven't, but Peter probably has.
Yeah. It was quite a night. There's no doubt about it.
You know, I like to, you know, and you were in a role last night. Among the roles you had last night, Peter, is one that I am very familiar with, which is that if you live long enough, people come to you and say, "What was it like in 1979?" You know, it's
that's right.
79. It was 72. Yeah. Was the one
and
I heard.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's not a bad gig, man, because you know, it's all you have to do to qualify is to, you know, have the birth certificate. It helps. But you were you and Bob Ray, especially, where you were kind of the. You were the you know, you were like Eric Kearns used to be, for God's sakes.
Yeah, we felt like we were on the Muppet Show, you know, those two guys, two old guys in the corner. But 72 actually was a great thing to talk about because it had been Pierre Trudeau's first election since his majority win in 68. And he, too, was knocked down to a minority. And it was a really dicey one. It was very close, only two seats separating him and Robert Stanfield. So the way that unfolded was actually something to be thinking about, especially early in the evening last night when it was pretty clear it was going to be a minority, but we didn't know how many seats were going to be involved.
I mean, I'm not a big fan necessarily of product placement, but did Fisherman's Friends have a product placement with Rosemary? God love her, because I've been there, Peter. She came back one time, and my wife said to me, "She's got a lozenge in her mouth." I said, "I know she's got a lozenge in her mouth. Like, how's she doing this morning? Has anybody talked to her?"
Anything we could find. She was in rough shape there for a while. But mind you, she was in a lot rougher shape 24 hours before. They didn't think she was going to be able to do it. So they pumped her full of something, and it all worked. So that was good.
Well, good for her.
You know, I guess we'll talk a little bit about what actually happened last night. But, you know, I've been intrigued. I've covered elections, you know, as a newspaper guy over the years. I always loved it. I was on campaign buses going back to the 84 federal election campaign. I always enjoyed it. You know, so it's the closest thing to covering sports in a lot of ways, to be honest. But working the desk on election night when the story unfolds in front of you, you don't know exactly how it's going to go. It is live. There are periods of frantic activity and long, long periods of fill. What's it like, you know, being the guy on election night? You were off to one side last night, but most of the time you've been in the center. What's that gig like from a TV point of view?
Well, it's fun. You know, as journalists, you thrive on those evenings because it is live. You don't know what's going to happen. You have a sense. You know, you've been looking at the polls like everybody else, so you have a sense of which way it's going. But you don't know in all 338 ridings what's going to happen. There are always going to be surprises. It's a thrill. I mean, it really is. And when you're working with a great team, both in front of the cameras and behind the cameras, you know you got your back covered, and it's going to be an evening of excitement.
Peter, well, I'll ask you about the Raptors in a minute, but I did want to, as someone who stayed up and stayed up to the end and heard Rosemary wish us all good luck tomorrow when she signed off, the three leaders speaking at the same time, look, I don't want to turn this into a political discussion necessarily, but that doesn't necessarily augur well for the level of cooperation that we need to see in this country. What do you need to see?
I'm not fully convinced.
I mean, as
fully
someone
convinced,
who's been an observer. Okay, go ahead.
I'm not fully convinced yet as to what exactly happened there. That might have just been, you know, bad advice from the logistics people on who goes when. I don't think when Andrew Scheer walked up to the microphone, he knew that Jagmeet Singh was still talking in a speech that went on for a long time.
Yes,
and I don't think Trudeau probably knew when he went up to the microphone that Scheer had just started speaking. There was something clearly had gone wrong there, but the optics of it were awful. It looked like that, looked like the debate where everybody kept talking over each other, and at a time when you expected as a Canadian in a difficult night that people are going to kind of reach out to try and get some sense of cooperation between everybody. It was just a metaphor for just a complete, you know, screw up. It really looked bad and sounded bad and left you wondering, oh my God, what's this next year or two going to look like?
I think the last time I actually spoke to you or saw you in person, it was at the Raptors Championship, the Raptors Championship Parade. And you know, obviously tonight is a celebration of the NBA title. It will be a ring ceremony, a raising of the banner to the Raptors here at Scotiabank Arena, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to ask you the same question. I mean, I've asked Elliot Friedman and other people, and I think it's important to revisit this. Try to put in context for me, as someone who's seen a lot happen in this country, what that win meant nationwide.
Well, it was an awakening of sorts to the thrill of basketball and to the thrill of a country joining together to watch something happen. I mean, you have to remember that it came almost unexpectedly, right? Nobody thought at the beginning of those playoffs that we've got a real shot at going all the way for the championship. Nobody thought at the beginning of those playoffs that hockey in Canada, and in the sense of the Canadian teams, would be gone in, you know, April. When was it? The end of April. There would be no more Canadian teams involved. So there was this vacuum there for something to for people to latch on to in their springtime, when usually there's a thrill, at least for a while, of a Canadian team or Canadian teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Suddenly, that was the vacuum was there. The Raptors were in it for the NBA, and they kept being in it. And then you can't take away the moment of the, you know, the shot, the Kawhi shot at the end of the second round that won it for them in Game 7. I mean, everything sort of came together into this magical moment, and suddenly, you know, basketball nets were appearing in driveways where there had never been one. And people were talking basketball in, you know, Tuktoyaktuk, and they'd never done that before. So it was just, it was a moment that you wonder whether it can ever happen again. Like, I'll be at the Raptors game tonight. You know, I've got tickets, and I'm, you know, really looking forward to it. My son and I'll go and watch. And but you go, can we ever recapture that moment? I don't know. It was just a very exciting time where everything came together in one. The fact that hockey wasn't, you know, on people's minds, the fact that this team, which had come together kind of late, had this one magical player involved in the team, it was just kind of a wonderful moment that that we all got to enjoy, whether we were in Toronto or whether we were in Vancouver or whether we were, as I said, in Tuktoyaktuk.
Sometimes it feels, Peter, like the, you know, and there are those moments when it's really national or rare, right? Like, even hockey divides, right? Mm-hmm. If we had a Canadian team in the Stanley Cup, half the country would hate them. But, you know, this is more like the Olympics. It's like the Blue Jays, you know, in those postseasons, the 2015-16 and going way back. But do you think, does it feel like the culture shifts a little bit in that moment?
It does, because, you know, we're a big country. We're a diverse country. We have many different interests competing against each other. And there are very few kind of national sharing moments where you can you have the sense that, man, everybody in the country is kind of doing the same thing or watching the same thing. Sometimes it happens in politics around a referendum or a big election campaign like the Free Trade 88 election. Sometimes it happens there. Sometimes it happens in sports with the Olympics. And this was one of those moments where you had a pretty good sense that people who perhaps never even watched a basketball game in any serious fashion were sitting there in their homes in different places all over the country, and they suddenly were like, they suddenly knew everything about basketball, or thought they did, and they were enjoying the moment and sharing it with their you know, their Canadian neighbors from coast to coast to coast. Doesn't happen often. When it does, it's you know, it's a wonderful thing.
Hey, Peter, listen, we really appreciate you joining us after a hectic night. Enjoy the game tonight. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Stephen. Great to talk to you both.
All right. See you,
Take
Peter.
Take care. The great Peter Mansbridge joining us. So that is it for Writer's Block for today. Want to thank the folks at MLSE who helped take care of us and set up all these security barriers for us.
Yes, we appreciate that.
I want to thank Danielle, Caitlin, and Stephen who helped us here, and everybody back at the station. Raptors and Pelicans tonight. Don't forget, if you're coming down, be in your seats by 7:15 for the pregame ceremonies. We're going to turn it over to Tim and Sid in Jurassic Park. Thanks for joining us on Writer's Block.